ജയം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയ ശരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിഥില പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാ കൃഷ്ണ ഗോപ ഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട് രാധാകുണ്ട് ഗിരിഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോർ പ്രേമനന്ദി All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namami Shripadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Dinamini. Namaste Sarasvadevam Gauravani Prajarini. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshakarini. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാത് ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫല സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസവ ജായതേ സദാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ നാമസങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപപ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമന തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യദോന്വയാദിതരദശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൺ തേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത്സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാം ധാന്യാസ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം വരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മപ്രോജിതകൈതവോത്രപരമോ നിർമത്സരാണം സദാ വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനി കൃതേ കിം വാ പരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്രകൃതി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭീ തൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാതമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഃ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നമഃ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം ഹനുവേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈവാഹ്യനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജുഹാവാം പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലം ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനും ഉപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ തവേനൂക്കുണിതാധൃതാനനേന്ദോ മമ വാചി വിജംബദാ മുരാരേർ മധുരിം കനികാവികാവികാവി നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിൻഹിരിനാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശകാരിണി ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ വന്ദേ നന്ദം വ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ടശാ യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാ സമുദ്രം రాధాసహాయమతి సుందర మందహాసం వదాలయేశ మనిషం ప్రతిభావయామి కోమలం పూజయన్ వేణుం శ్యామళోయం కుమారక వేదవేద్య పరం బ్రహ్మ వాసదాం పురలో మమ మూహం కరోతి వాచాలం అంగం లంఘయతి గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః శ్రీమతి రాధికాయే నమః సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద ఓం పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవదాం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణ మునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీ భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినిం అంబ త్వామనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణి నమోస్తు వ్యాస విశాల బుద్ధి ఫుల్లారవిందాయపత్రనేత్ర ఏన త్వయా భారత తైలపూర్ణ ప్రజ్వాలితో జ్ఞానమయ ప్రదీప ప్రపన్న పారిజాతాయ త్వత్రవేత్రైకవాణయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః సర్వోపనిషదో గావో దుగ్ధాగోపాలనందన పార్థో వత్స సుదీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహ వసుదేవసుదం దేవం కంసచాణూరమర్దనం దేవకీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం భీష్మద్రోణతట జయద్రథ జలా గాంధార నీలోల్పల శల్యగ్రాహవతీ కృపేణ వహని కర్ణేన వేలాకుల అశ్వథామా వికర్ణ ఘోరమకర దుర్యోధనావర్తిని సుతీర్ణ ఖలు పాండవైరణ నదీ కైవర్తక కేశవ పారాశర్యవజ సరోజమలం గీతార్థగంధోల్కటం నానాఖ్యానక కేసరం హరికథా సంబోధనాబోధితం లోకై సజ్జన షల్పదైరహరః పేవీయమానం ముదా భూయాద్ భారత పంకజ కలిమల ప్రధ్వంసిన శ్రేయసే మూగం కరోతి వాచాలం పంగం లంఘయతే గిరిం యల్కృపాతమహం వందే పరమానందమాధవం యం బ్రహ్మా వరుణీంద్ర రుద్రమరుదస్త్వన్వంది దివ్యైస్తవే వేదైర్ సంగపదైర్ క్రమౌపనిషదైర్ గాయంతియం సామగాః ధ్యానావస్థిత తద్గతేన మనసా పశ్యంతియం యోగినో యస్యాందం న విదుసురాసురగణై దేవాయ తస్మై నమః. Yesterday we read the two chapters, which was 82 and 83, isn't it? And today, instead of going back to that chapters, I just thought that something important about Srimad Bhagavatam. Main problem is that unless one reads every day Bhagavatam, one or two chapters, and get used to it, it is difficult to, when we talk from Bhagavatam, difficult to take it on board. Because when you listen, there should be a background behind that. The background is what you read at home. So, because for various reasons, people haven't cultivated that habit of reading Bhagavatam at home, regular basis, it becomes sometimes important to say certain things based on which Bhagavatam was constructed. For example, therefore, today I thought, being an Easter holiday and people are a little bit more relaxed than usual, otherwise you can see by looking at the face of the people so much anxiety about various things in this world. And these things in the Bhagavatam, when it's spoken, to get that inside, unless one is extremely peaceful inside, this will not go in, because various thought waves comes and takes it away from inside. So I thought it is a good time to talk today, and certain things, particularly how Upanishad principles, principles in the Upanishads, because Vedavyasa Maharshi knows well that ordinary people will not be able to get in tune with it, what he has spoken in the Upanishads. So therefore, how the Upanishads principles, how expertly, extremely, with a lot of expertise, he has put that into Bhagavatam in a very, in a easier way for people to absorb. So unless you give a lot of attention to it, these things won't click inside. And if it doesn't click inside, it will become another story and pass through. That's the difficulty. So today we will talk about first thing, that in Srimad Bhagavatam, how Vedavyasa Maharshi incorporated the message of Upanishads in a very expert manner into the Bhagavatam, especially in the beginning with the first canto itself. Why Bhagavatam was written and what was the motive behind it? There were so many other Puranas, the same story spoken in details in other Puranam, like Skanda Puranam, Agni Puranam, Vayu Puranam, Vamana Puranam. All other Puranams comes into Bhagavatam. You can see that Narasimha Puranam is there, Kurma Puranam is there, Vayu Puranam is there. And all other Puranams has come into Bhagavatam. And all these things have been expertly spoken in the other Puranams as well. But he felt the necessity to write Bhagavatam, and in Bhagavatam to bring in the principles of Upanishads in such an expert way that those who read Bhagavatam and who has taken shelter of Bhagavatam, as Krishna says, Srimad Bhagavatakhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi. So to understand that, and if you give a lot of attention to this, probably this may be a interesting class. So if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto itself is talking about the person who should listen to Bhagavatam, is it not? So, and the beginning of second canto, Shuga Brahmarshi comes into Srimad Bhagavatam, to talk Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit. The whole of first canto, Shuga Brahmarshi hasn't spoken anything. He has just arrived at the end, isn't it? The last chapter in the first canto, 19th chapter. And therefore, that last chapter in the first canto, which is the 19th chapter, from the Shastring viewpoint, from the viewpoint of Shastram, it's a very important chapter. But there is not much of a story in that chapter. If you read that chapter, you will notice that. There's not a lot of story in that chapter, but from the Shastram side, it is an important chapter. Basically, Parikshit Maharaj is lamenting for what happened, what he has done, isn't it? And as a punishment for that, he wanted that the king, he should give up the kingdom. That decision was made. Parikshit made the decision to give up the kingdom. And not only that, with the kingdom means, along with that, all his wealth, assets in this world, everything. Remember, he was ruling the whole planet from Hastinapur, and he had so much wealth behind him, but he felt that for the mistake what he has committed, he wanted to get rid of everything from him position, and he wanted to become absolutely with nothing to that stage. So why is that? Why did he make that decision? Because he felt that the action he has performed by offending that sage, who Shamigha Rishi, that he wanted the result of that action to come back to him immediately, without any delay. Otherwise, what could happen is that results could carry on, not only to Parikshit, even to the family members in later life. So he is praying there that let the result come to me straight away, and I am prepared for that. That is the intelligent Parikshit behind it. So you can understand that we all make mistakes in life, but for us to recognize that we have made a mistake is very, very difficult, isn't it? That mistake has been committed. And on our own, we won't think in that way, because we'll think we have been right, we have done the right thing, somebody else is wrong. But even if somebody else mentions to you that it was a wrong thing that what you have done, then even then you will feel upset with them, you will feel angry with them. Here is Parikshit's glory. Why Parikshit says that great Mahatmas, on their own, they will not commit offenses deliberately. Deliberately they won't commit offenses. And by chance, by mistake, or by accident, if anything happens in their life, they will not justify it, what they have done. And so here you can see that by mistake, by misunderstanding, that something happened to Parikshit at the moment when he took the dead snake and put it on the neck of Shamigarishi. He put that on the Shamigarishi's neck. By it so happened at that moment, he felt like doing that. But immediately he didn't realize that he has done the mistake. This is how life is in this world. As soon as he got back to the palace, he realized that I have done a mistake. I shouldn't have done it. Already thing has been done. It's been done. When he did that, he didn't think about it, what he was doing. He just did that and he got back. And he says there that he was thinking like this, that when he put the snake on the throat, on the neck of Shamigarishi, he was thinking that Shamigarishi is in a false samadhi acting, not real, genuine samadhi state. Because Shamigarishi was in meditation. If you look into Bhagavatam, there is two lines there. Sthanatrayat param praptam brahma bhudam avikriyam. Four words he has used there. In these four words, Sudha Goswami says there, Sthanatrayat param praptam brahma bhudam avikriyam. That's all he had to say about that. That was sufficient. Unfortunately, Parikshit did not see it that way. That's what happened. Sthanatrayat means we are all in Avastatrayam. Avastatrayam means Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. These three states are called Avastatrayam. Avastatrayam is also called Sthanatrayam. Sthanatraya Param Praptam, that he has gone beyond that. That means Turiyam. The fourth state, Brahma Bhudam, he was in the Brahman realized state. Avikriyam, he was not engaged in any karmam, any activities. So, Sthanatrayat Param Praptam, Brahma Bhudam, Avikriyam. In that state he was. But Parikshit could not recognize that state. So he thought that why should he, is he trying to fool me by remaining in this samadhi state? Is he trying to cheat me? And therefore he got upset. Everything happened so fast, he took the dead snake, put it on his neck and then walked out from there. When he got back to the, you see how Antaryami works from inside. Krishna pointed out to him from inside, what you have done is a wrong thing. You shouldn't have done that. Right? So, what he thought at that time was, probably this rishi, naturally there is a little bit of uneasiness between the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. So, he thought that, after all, rishi is a Brahmana, Mahabrahmana. And has Brahmana thought about me? After all, this is a Kshatriya, isn't it? And this Kshatriya, that what does he want from me? Kshatriya, because from Brahmana you don't expect anything much except spiritual knowledge. That's all they offer to the world. So Kshatriya's thought, being a Kshatriya, he has thought that what is this Brahmana going to offer it to me? Maybe in that mood he thought that this Brahmana is kept his eyes closed, thinking that I have nothing to offer to him. And he was sitting like that. And in that way, these are all various thoughts that came through his head in his relationship with Shamigarishi. He took the dead snake and put it on his throat. But later, Parikshit Maharaj thought that what I did was a wrong thing. Why? He started thinking, in my family background, behind me, all those personalities, how great, how famous they were, and they have never done such a thing in their life. And suppose nobody prior to him, Abhimanyu or Arjuna or any of the Pandavas, none of them had a reputation for offending the great sages and the Brahmanas. They were all very honorable to them, and they honored them, and therefore this was something Parikshit started feeling guilty when he got back to the palace. He thought that suppose this was my, he thought like this, it was my conclusion that he was in a false samadhi, but suppose he was in the real samadhi state, then the mistake I have done is unforgivable, isn't it? Somebody who was in a state like that, to go and put a dead snake around his neck, is unforgivable. That is how Parikshit thought about that. So, and particularly Pandavas have this reputation, that they rule the planet based on the instructions from the sages, great rishis and the sages. And what I have done is not at all in matching with that tradition. It was so abominable thing what I have done compared to where I come from and my ancestors, have how they ruled this planet. So when this thought came to Parikshit, he felt so guilty inside, guilty consciousness, because he was really guilty, that he decided that I want to give up everything in this world. This is what has changed the, turned the life for Parikshit. You can imagine, you have to visualize this in your own mind, that how Parikshit felt that, how he was feeling that inside at that time. So what he did was, that he called his son, Janmejaya, and put him on the throne, and told him, you can now rule this planet. And he fixed up completely on Krishna, and hearing about Krishna, decided to somehow or the other get himself attached to Krishna while leaving this body. And also he thought that just by giving up the kingdom, palace and the wealth is not good enough. Let me give up my body itself. Imagine the degree of renunciation that has happened to him at that moment. This is how it happens to people who are in the process of spiritual advancement. How things can happen to them. Overnight, one incident was enough for them to turn the whole thing around, and he decided to give up everything. Not only the kingdom, not only the palace, everything, including his body himself. And that is why that he came to Ganga River, and he decided to sit down on the banks of the river and completely depend on Krishna for that. And at that moment in time, many, many rishis or sages, they came to see him. They came to see him. So, this is interesting, why it is like that. That rishis, you don't have to go and look for them. Where are they? Or to find them out where they are. If you just remember in your heart about these great personalities, that is sufficient to purify yourself and your family and everybody in this world. So, when you get an opportunity for the rishis to come to that spot where Parikshit was giving up his body, when they came over and sat there in front of him, Parikshit thought that, this, I cannot believe this, how this has happened. He didn't organize it himself. As soon as he came and sat down on the riverbank, Ganga River, and decided to give up his body, one after the other, all those listed rishis came. Atrim vasishtascha vanasharadval arishtanemi bruhurangirascha parasharogadi sudodharama udatte indra pramadedmavahau medhadir devalamashtisheno bharadvajogadama pipalada maitrayamaurvakavashakumbhayonir doibayeno bhagavan naradascha anyeja devarshi brahmarshi varyam rajarshi varyam arunadayascha nanashaya pravaran sameda Abhyarcha Raja Shirasa Vavande. That is the list of them who have arrived on the scene, not being informed by anybody, on their own accord. You can see how Krishna operates from the heart of these great souls. So they arrived there, and that
Parikshit thought at that moment, what's happening to me? I have done something seriously wrong, and here Krishna is sending all these sages to me. Is that not an amazing thing? Suppose if you have done a wrong thing, especially a very serious offense like this, what he has done, you would not expect any mercy from Krishna. You will expect punishment. Instead of punishment, here what you find, Krishna is sending all the sages there. So then you can see there that he realized that these people have come, all these rishis have come here, and something is going to happen, otherwise they wouldn't have come here. Then if you get an opportunity to hear from these great souls, then it's more or less guaranteed that there will not be another birth again. There will not be another birth again. All of them are liberated souls, these rishis, or the founders of the Vedic tradition, isn't it? So when they have arrived, the Brahmarshis, there are all varieties there. You can see the looking at the rishis. They were classified into Brahmarshis, Rajarshis, Devarshis and Maharshis. Four categories are there in that. Brahman realized the souls are Brahmarshis. When the kings become rishis, they are called Rajarshis. And ordinary rishis are Maharshis. When the demigods and all, they become rishis, they are Devarshis. So different categories of rishis are there. So like Narada Maharshi, he is Devarshi, they call him, because he is actually coming from the higher planets. He is one of the, if you remember, he was one of the Vidyadharas who was singing in his previous life, he says. Because he became a rishi after that, he became Devarshi. The Parikshit is a Rajarshi. Yudhishthira is Rajarshi. Ambarish is Rajarshi. They were kings at one time, but they became rishis later. Vishwamitra is Rajarshi, because he was a king before. Whereas Atri, Vasishtha, Shyamana, Sharadwala, Arishtanemi, all these are Brahmarshis. Brahman realized rishis they are. So this is, all these type of personalities arrived there on the spot. So, and they have come to bless Parikshit. They come to bless Parikshit. Otherwise they wouldn't have come there. So they were thinking that, let us see Parikshit, who is going to die within 7 days' time. They knew this. Parikshit is going to leave his body within 7 days' time. When they got there, they themselves were very surprised. They were thinking that a person who is going to leave his body on the 7th day, he should be in terrible anxiety, isn't it? We are now in anxiety. We are not even told that in 7 days' time we'll be gone. But we know that we'll be gone soon or than later. So even after, that is sufficient to keep us frightened in life. Fearful about the death, what will happen at the time of death, how things are going to happen. But when they looked at Parikshit's face, there was not even a trace of any anxiety or fear. And the face was in a totally peaceful state. Totally peaceful state. So whatever it may be, when he arrived there, he was received very well by, they were all received very well, and they were all washed, their feet were washed, and they were offered the seats to sit, and they sat down there. And Parikshit told them that I'm not at all in anxiety, and I'm not at all concerned about this curse that's been given to me. By who? By Shamigarishi's son Shringi. Shringi cursed him. Brahmana boy, 5 years old, cursed him that in 7 days' time you will die, isn't it? So Parikshit, the message was conveyed to him by the father, Shamigarishi. My son has made this curse on you, and he sent a few brahmacharis to Parikshit's palace to inform him about this. So when the message got there, Parikshit accepted it without saying one word to the child, to the brahmacharis who had come from Shamigarishi's ashram. And he didn't complain anything, because I have done a mistake, I am accepting the result. This was Parikshit's state of mind at that time. So he was saying that, let Takshaka come, let him bite me, and I need this punishment. I deserve this for what I have done. And before that happens, I want to fix myself, my mind, on Krishna's lotus feet, and before I leave this body. And I do not know, I may have to take birth again for what I have done. But at least this one life, let me leave this body by fixing my mind on Krishna, because this is a good warning. I am in a healthy state and Krishna has given me this warning. I have only a life of 7 days' time, because that was the curse from Sringi, that in 7 days' time you will leave this body. So I have got an advance warning. Why shouldn't I be prepare myself for that? In this way, all the thoughts that has come through Parikshit at that moment were like this. So, and he was saying that in order to fix the mind on Krishna's lotus feet, there should be bhakti in the heart, bhakti in the heart. And in order that bhakti to develop, there should be association with the in salsangam, sajjana samsargam, or association with the devotees. That's the only way bhakti will develop in the heart. Otherwise it won't develop, isn't it? And in order for that to happen, there should be relationship with the devotees. If you are indifferent to them, that is difficult. So that's the question comes there. What should a person do when he knows that he has to leave this body? He has to leave his body. And tell me what I have to do. This is what Parikshit asked the question there to all the people who are present there. And there you can notice interesting thing. Shuka Brahmarshi's father, Vedavyasa Maharshi, was sitting there. And his father, Parashara Maharshi, is also sitting there. And they all know Srimad Bhagavatam. Do they not? They all know Srimad Bhagavatam. Parashara Maharshi has heard Srimad Bhagavatam. He taught Brihaspati. Then Sankhyayana Maharshi, through him Maitreya Maharshi, there is one Bhagavata Parambara in that route. And similarly, Vedavyasa Maharshi has learned Bhagavatam from Narada Maharshi, Brahma to Narada to Vyasa, like that. So Vedavyasa and Parashara Maharshi knows Bhagavatam very well, because it's through Vedavyasa it has come to Sukadeva Goswami. But neither Parashara Maharshi nor Vedavyasa Maharshi spoke to Parikshit from Bhagavatam at that time, even though they were present there. So they did not instruct him. What is the reason for that? What was the reason for that? When Parikshit appeared in this world, when he took birth, Yudhishthira Maharaj made the horoscope for Parikshit. First thing what he did was, he wanted to know from the learned Brahmanas and the astrologers, what will happen to this child? Because he is the only one that is left out in among the Pandavas, isn't it? And Ashwatthama wanted, killed all the other children from Draupadi. This only child was the hope, so that the continuity of the dynasty to remain. And upon the way, he says there, that I will make sure that this world is without any trace of any Pandavas. And that is how Ashwatthama wanted to kill everybody. But somehow Parikshit survived. Even though Ashwatthama sent the Brahmastram to kill him, Krishna protected him. And Parikshit survived here. So, when Parikshit was born, Yudhishthira Maharaj had consulted astrologers and the rishis and the brahmanas and wanted to know what will happen to this child. What will happen to this child? So, at that time, the rishis told and the astrologers told to Yudhishthira Maharaj, that Vedavyasa Maharshi's son, Shuka Brahmarshi, Sukadeva Goswami, will come as the spiritual master for Parikshit. He has spoken that at that time. And this was known to everybody. So therefore, Parashara and Vedavyas did not get involved, stayed out of it. They didn't want to talk to him. Let Shuka Brahmarshi come, because it has already been spoken like that before. So, he will. What they said was that Parikshit will hear. All these things were forecast well in advance at the time of birth itself. These things were spoken at the time of birth itself, that he will get cursed by Tatshaga at some time later, before he gives up his body, and he will hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Sri Shuka Brahmarshi before his death. And he will leave his body fully liberated. So these things were forecast by the astrologers way before this incident happened. So, because, and all these things were known to Vedavyasa and Parashara.
Parashrama Rishi. Rishis have this nature. They are all very inward-looking people. They are not externals. They are inward-looking nature. And they know very well inside what has been spoken then must come true. It cannot go otherwise. And they will not work against the flow of divine decisions. Whatever the astrologers have spoken like that, the rishis were able to appreciate that. If that is what Krishna wants that to happen, let it so. And that's the way they took it. So, so they were actually waiting there. Parashramashi, Vedavyas and all the other rishis we have spoken here, they were all waiting for what? For Shuka Brahmarshi to come. So, at that time, Shuka Brahmarshi arrives there. No clothes on the body, fully naked, and there is a kind of, smell from the body permeating everywhere. A beautiful smell from his body. Like if you remember, Rishabhadev when he gave up the body, a smell came from his body, isn't it? Permeated everywhere. The same way it was happening from Shuka Brahmarshi's body also. And without knowing the greatness of this personality, Shuka Brahmarshi, all the loads of women and children, they were all following him, along with him. And he looked around 16 years old. And anybody who sees him at that time will definitely notice his glory or his special status. So by age, if you look at him, he is younger to everybody. And they were all sitting there. Who? His father, grandfather, everybody was sitting there. But when Shuka Brahmarshi arrived there, they all got up. Who? Father and grandfather and everybody. And they paid their obeisances to Parikshit. See? The grandson. The grandfather and the father paid their obeisances to the grandson. And then Parikshit also paid his obeisances to Shri Shuka Brahmarshi. So we can understand from this how rishis follow the principles of spiritual life. For they never look at the body of a person and then decide whether I should offer my respects or not. They look at the realization of that person. They knew very well that our grandson is not an ordinary person, is not a person of the same nature like Parashara and Vedavyas themselves are great personalities. Is not. But in spite of that, they got up from their seats and offered their respects to Shuka Brahmarshi, showing to us that they are looking at Shuka Brahmarshi not like the way we look at him. We would have said, why they should pay obeisances to Shuka Brahmarshi? They are the father and grandfather, a lot older than them, older than him. And it would have normally not expected them to offer their respects to him. But here what you find is the other way. So, they returned to Parikshit and told him, my dear king, that your teacher, spiritual master had come, who is capable of removing all your doubts. That's how he started. So, it was at that time, you will see, the story in this chapter is very little. There is not much of a story. You will see at the end, he asked this question, that he says here, and the last chapter, 38 verse, Yachrodavyam adho japyam, yel kartavyam nirbhi prabho, smartavyam bhajaniyam va, bruhi yadva vipariyayam. This was the question. Yachrodavyam adho japyam, yel kartavyam nirbhi prabho, smartavyam bhajaniyam va, bruhi yadva vipariyayam. Then, what should I do? What should I hear? What should I chant? What should I remember? And one side, and the other thing, what I should not hear, what I should not chant, and what I should not remember at the time of death. This was the question. And that is all in the 19th chapter. That's all in the 19th chapter. The story is only this much in the 19th chapter. And then you see there, the disciple and the spiritual master has met. First time, they are meeting each other. Now, let's go back and look at this whole thing. And then you will understand how expert Vedavyas is
in bringing the highest Upanishads knowledge to the practical level of an ordinary person who doesn't understand Upanishads. That expertise you can see in this whole story, how he has done that. So we'll look back into this whole story and try to understand that. What was the reason? Let's analyze the whole situation now. What was the reason then Parikshit Maharaj saw this Shamigha Rishi? Why did he get angry? And why did he put that dead snake on his throat? Why did he do that? Now is the interesting bit. The name of this Rishi in Bhagavatam, they have taken so much thoughts behind it that they gave the name of the Rishi is Shamigha, isn't it? You know that the word Shamigha means what? It means Shamam. Shamam means that control of the mind and senses. One who has got control of the mind and senses is called Shamigha. That is how that word comes. Normally you don't find anyone with the name Shamigha. Shamigha, Shangi, all these names are chosen very appropriately by Vedavyas. Deliberately, while putting the name to them, he wanted to tell us the whole character of the person behind it, whole state of consciousness of that. Shamigha means one who has total control of the mind and senses. So, practically what it means is, his mind is in so much under control that it is fully established in the self, Atma Swarupam. That means there is no mind operating. He is totally fixed established in the self. In the self means that means he is no more connection with the body. He has no more connection with the body. It is situated like that. That is why. That stay, you remember how they have spoken about Shamigha Rishi in the Bhagavatam? Sthanatrayal paramprapatam brahmabhudam avikrayam. If you look at that verse about him, that is what they had to say. Sthanatrayal paramprapatam brahmabhudam avikrayam. He says there, that is in the... What's the verse number? 36. Yeah. Pradividhendriya pranam anobuddhim uparadam sthanatraya parampraptam brahmabodham avikriyam. 26. 18th chapter. 26. It's already spoken about him like that. Why did they say that? To tell us he is Shamigha. Shamigha means who has complete shamam inside. That's why the name Shamigha has come to him. So total control on the senses and mind and fully established in the Brahman, Brahman realized state. That's where he is situated. So then that means avikriyam atmatattvam sthanatrayat parampraptam brahmabhudam avikriyam. That avikriyam atmatattvam. What is avikriyam means? Soul does not engage in karmam. That's the important thing. Body, mind, senses, they are all busy with the karmam. Soul has no karmam. Is it not? So, when you are established in the soul, in the platform of the soul, there is no karma. Avikriyat. There is no kriya, no activity at all. So, that state, avikriyat, brahmadattvam, brahmabhudam avikriyam. Brahmam realization. Brahmabhudha prasannalma, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Is it not? Brahmabhudha prasannalmana shochati na kamshani. The Brahmabhudham state he is. Avikriyam. No activity also. So, that means he has gone beyond the three states. Jagrat, Sopnam, Sushupti. And practically came to the fourth state known as Thuriyam. Where complete connection with the body is broken. And he is free from the... In Vedantam what they call it as... Adhyasam. This word will come throughout this chapter. We are discussing this one word called Adhyasam in this chapter. Adhyasam, it is an important word in the Vedantam also. And we are, due to adhyasam, we are in the body. Once the adhyasam has gone, then we are come out of the body. All adhyasam has to go from inside. That's why this particular canto, first canto, is also called adhyasaskandam. Because of adhyasam inside. Various names for the first canto. Adhyasaskandam, adhyariskandam. In different ways it is addressed, this canto. So once the adhyasam goes away from inside, then what happens? You realize that the connection with the body is broken completely. Connection with the mind is free, completely broken. Intelligence gone. Ego gone. Senses gone. Everything gone. You are situated in its pure spiritual consciousness or state of consciousness, what is known as Aham Brahmasmi state. That is where he is at the moment. So, so he is in that state. Remember this. He is in that state. And a person like that, who is sitting there in a body, who is in that state, on his neck he has gone and put the dead snake. I will go slowly so that you capture the message in this. That he is sitting there, no connection with the body, no connection with the mind. He has gone away from the body, in the sense that in his consciousness, he has no connection with the body. Parikshit has gone and put the dead snake around the body and came out from there. Will he answer if he put that on somebody like that? Parikshit didn't get any answer from him. He expected that, Parikshit thought that, that first fellow will, man will get up, or the sage will get up and will start fighting with him for what he has done. But because he was in that state, he didn't know what was happening because he has disconnected from the body. That was the situation. And therefore, he did not answer back anything. He was not even aware what was happening in the body. That was the state. He was not even aware. So, if you look these two people, keep now Parikshit one side and Shamigrishi on the other side. And if you look at both of them, what is the difference between the two? You got to analyze all these things. Otherwise, Bhagavatam is not a storybook. If you start thinking it's story, oh, it's not important, it's all just stories. Then you should know what is Bhagavatam about, isn't it? So, you can see here that if you keep these two people side by side and look at them, then you will know the secret in that. You will know the secret in that. What is that? Now, let's understand what this is means, all this means then. For all our miseries in material world or material existence, what is the reason? What's the reason? Reason is this, that we are experiencing miseries here in this world. Always anxiety, always fear, always living in concerned about what will happen tomorrow. That what will happen to this body? What will happen to me at the time of death? What is going to happen after death? All this anxiety, it is in a very subtle level working in everyone's heart. There is no question about that. So, and plus all other miseries of material world added to all these things. Then, and what is the reason that why we are suffering like this in this world? The answer to that, in Upanishads and Vedavyasa Maharshi and Brahma Sutram everywhere, they have only one thing to tell us. The reason for that, because you do not know who you are. That's all it is. The reason why you are suffering in this world from material life, material existence or samsaram as it's called, and also all the anxieties and fear and all other ragam, dvesham, envy, everything what we have built up in this world, due to which we suffer in this world, the only reason for that, according to Shastram, according to Vedavyasa Maharshi, Brahma Sutram and all other Vedic literature, there is only one reason behind that. That, what is that? Because you do not know who you are. They mentioned that very categorically, they have stated this. Because you don't know who you are suffering. That's the answer for that. So, because we have lost that identity of our real identity, and that is called Ajnanam or Avidya. In Shastram, there you will find so many words. And they are very firm on that. They will not make any concession on that. You can go and cry and say all your miseries of life. They will look at and laugh at you. Because of your ignorance and ajnanam, you are complaining about all these things. What can be done? because the correction is required somewhere else. Correction is not in the body or in the world. You can't correct the world, you can't correct others, you can't correct the world, you can't correct your body also. Problem is that the very fundamental issue is that you do not know who you are, and therefore all this problem. That is why the first lesson in the Bhagavatam to start with. That's why how Vedavyas bring the whole Upanishad's knowledge into this story through these personalities like Shamigrishi, Parikshit, Shringi. These are the three people whom we have got in this chapter. It is centered around them. It has been built up. So this, how did this happen? Because we lost identity of who we are, and due to that, this situation in our life today where we are now, and that is called adhyasam. See that word? Adhyasam. Adhyasam means this, that you have identified due to ignorance. We will see why it has happened, that's later. But adhyasam means, due to my ignorance in me, I have lost my identity, and I am in this world, identifying with this body, bodily extensions, and the world, and in various ways, identifications. Due to that, I am in this situation. But adhyasam means a little bit more than that. Adhyasam also means, it's not only that you don't know who you are, that you have lost it already. That's first thing. That you lost your identity, actual identity. Instead, you have gone and what is called a superimposition. Superimposition is this adhyasam. That means you are going and identifying with something what you are actually not. One thing, you have lost the identity. That's enough for the problem. Secondly, added to that, you have gone and identified with something which is totally wrong. What means the body, the mind, the intelligence, and that is in the Jnanamargam. If you say like this, you will say identification with the body, mind, intelligence, ego. In the Yoga Margam, when they say Patanjali Sashtanga Yoga, when they talk about it, they will say like this: you have gone and identified with the five sheets around it, which is called Annamayam, Pranamayam, Manomayam, Jnanamayam, Anandamayam. Two different ways of saying, that's all. Whether you say it through the Jnanamargam or through the Yogamargam, it makes no difference. Mistake has happened, that you lost your identity with the self, who you are actually, and then gone and identified with something what you are not. That is this material body. But in the Yogamargam, Ashtanga Yoga, when you say, you will say like this: Annamayam, Pranamayam, Manomayam, Vijnanamayam, Anandamayam. That five sheets, you are identifying with that. Or, if you are saying through the Jnanamargam, you will say like this: you are gone and identified with mind, body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, in that way. So, and what happens then? Then, not only you are identified with them, all what they are doing, what the body is doing, what the mind is doing, what the intelligence is doing, all that, when it is being done, you are thinking, you are doing it. Isn't it? You are doing it. And the dharma means their activities, everything, all their activities, that means what the body is doing, what the mind is doing, what the intelligence is doing, what the ego is doing, what the senses are doing, you are imposing all that on yourself, individual self, who you are actually. You are imposing all that on yourself, and that is called adhyasam. So this adhyasam is an important word. How adhyasam happens? So the result of that adhyasam, or due to this imposition on the soul for all the activities of the body, mind, intelligence, ego and everything, the result of that, this illusion has built up inside, and due to that illusion, you started thinking that all the activities of my body is my activities. All the activities of my mind is my activities. All the is mine. Identification got stronger and stronger. And the result of all this is that in course of time, we have to keep on changing the body. We have to keep on changing the body. The result is this, that you have to keep on coming here, take birth, live in this world, leave this body, and again wander around in this material world without any end to this misery. Repeated birth and death. cycle of birth and death is a result of this adhyasam. What has happened? That we have mistakenly taken the activities of the body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything, put that on us. And from the experience of the Shamigarishi, you can understand that sthanatrayat param praptam brahma bhutam avikriyam, that once you have gone above these three states, including not only activities of body and mind, these three things, jagra swapnam sushupti, also imposed on the self. And that is why Krishna says in the Ekadasi Skandam, they are not in the self. He has to say this to us. Otherwise, how would we know? He tells us, it is not in the self. It is in the intelligence. It is in the mind. It is in the body. Three modes of material nature, they are in the body, mind, and intelligence. The three states, jagrat, swapnam, sushupti, they are in the body, mind, and intelligence, not in the self. Everywhere Krishna keeps repeating this, that it's not in the self, it's not in the self, it's not in the self. Why does he do that? Because we don't know that. We are always thinking everything is, I've done it, I got it. And we are suffering from, when good things comes, we are enjoying it. When misery comes, we are suffering heavily. So this superimposition of the activities of the body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything on the soul is called adhyasam. On the self is called adhyasam. For example, and this will not stop. This is not going to stop unless we realize who we are. That's the answer to that. This is not going to stop. You can chant Hare Krishna millions of years. You can do so many things in this world. Unless you come out of this ignorance, because these are the truth behind everything. You may do anything in this life, but till you come out of this ignorance, it is not going to save us from the problems of life. So they give the example that sky, if you look at the sky, sometimes it's bluish, sometimes it's blackish, sometimes it is white, and sometimes it's reddish. Various colors appears in the sky, but you know very well, the sky is not affected by any of that. They are temporary things, appears to us for us in that way, at that particular moment in time. That space is not color. It has no color. And we are actually imposing the colors on the space. We look at the sky and say, oh, the sky is very dark or sky is very bluish today. We impose these colors on the sky. Similarly, everything what we are experiencing is nothing but imposition of our mind and mental thoughts on the self and thinking that that's the way it is, isn't it? So therefore, in spite of all these different colors we experience in the sky, nothing is happening to the sky. Similarly, the self inside, pure consciousness, is always pure. You can't paint it with any color. You can't have, and these three modes of material nature is nothing but the color that's happening inside the body and the mind. It will not happen to the soul. So that is why Dehendriyadi Karmani Amale Belam Sachidalpani. The definition of the soul in the Upanishads. Dehendriyadi Karmani. Mind, body, senses, and activities, none of them Amale Sachidalpani. Soul pure, no connection with the soul. That is how they say about that. So here, interesting is that in this chapter there is not much spoken about Parikshit as such. Normally, people will ask the kind of questions. Let me talk this also, say about these things. Takshaka is going to come and bite Parikshit, isn't it? So, generally people will ask, how poisonous was the snake? This is the kind of questions people are asking. That's why they are not ready for spiritual understanding. They will ask this kind of questions. And they will say, for that kind of poison, what should be the treatment? Vedavyasa Maharshi was not concerned about what the poison was. All he knew was, and they will even ask him, ask the question, what kind of injection, what do they call that, for the poison from the snake? You have a they have a certain thing which they inject into the body as a protection for the poison not to spread into the brain and other parts of the body. Parikshit has not asked any of those questions. You would have expected normally, isn't it? That if he knew that the snake is coming to bite me, and if it's unavoidable, I should ask this question, that what kind of, how powerful that poison is, Tatchaka's poison, and if that poison, is there any antidote or something they call it, isn't it, for the venom, that Parikshit should have asked that question, but he didn't. He didn't ask that question. So, so similarly, that due to this ignorance in us, what is already there, and where we have forgotten our identity, and we are identifying with this body, thinking that I am this body, and we are living like that in this world, and this is the state where you are already bitten by the snake. Because that ajnanam is that poison which is already in the body, in all of us. Only thing is, we don't recognize there is a poison in us. Poison is this, that due to our ignorance, I have lost my identity. I am identifying with the body and the mind and the senses and the ego. And all these experiences in this world, I am taking it as real. It is affecting me, I am thinking. I'm making friendship with somebody, enmity towards somebody else, ragam, dvesham. Then everything, when I'm doing anything here, I'm thinking I've done this. And when the results come, I feel happy. Good results come. Bad results come, I feel unhappy. This whole circle is nothing but this ajnanam in us, isn't it? And here is where Srimad Bhagavatam's importance. Bhagavatam's importance. So, people may think that long ago, when did this happen? 5,000 years ago. People ask this question. 5,000 years ago, there was a king by name Parikshit. A snake came to bite him. Then, so he knew that he was going to get bitten by a snake. So he went to a river bank and sat there. So in order to keep him peaceful, they told him a story, and that is Bhagavatam. This is how general class of people will understand. Most of us also. I'm not saying everybody, but some majority of us have this understanding about Bhagavatam. That Parikshit was a king who lived 5,000 years ago, and somebody cursed him that he'll be bitten by a snake and die. And he knew that he was going to die in 7 days' time. So he went and decided to wait and see what's going to happen. And he was very frightened about the fear of death. And therefore, to keep him peaceful, all these people got together and sat around him and spoke to him some stories. And that's Bhagavatam. This is the general... People don't understand what Bhagavatam is about. This is the problem. This is the problem. And if it is like that, there is no point in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. If it is a bunch of stories, just to get this, know what happened 5,000 years ago to Parikshit. But have you seen Parikshit's question there? He is asking this question that he says, Yat shrodavyam atho japyam yel kartavyam nirbhiprabho smartavyam vajaniyam va bruhiyadva vibhajayam. What is my duty? This is what he is asking. When I know I am going to die, what is my duty? That's what he asked. He didn't tell them, you tell me some stories so that I can pass my time for the 7 days before Tatshaka comes, and then I'll listen to some stories and pass my time. Or put the television on, I'll sit and watch the telly for 7 days before he comes and finishes his job. This is not what he said. He said, what is my duty? He's saying, what is my kartavyam? What is my kartavyam? So, here, that is how you have to connect Vedavyasa Maharshi's thinking with us. If you can't connect Bhagavatam with your own life, then this is all useless. Bhagavatam is all useless. People are thinking that this has happened some 5,000 years ago. What I've got to do with it? And if this is the way, if you approach Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam won't do anything good to you. But if you want the benefit of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, this Bhagavatam, the way Vedavyas, what he intended to do, what he intended to tell us, if that message does not get inside us, then we have not got any benefit from Bhagavatam. We may as well close the whole thing down. It's useless, wasting time. So here, important principle is, the question is this, what is my duty? That was the question, is it not? From that you have to catch further things from there. All things in this world keeps changing, is it not? Everything keeps changing. Body is changing, mind is changing, senses are changing. Senses are changing. So, these things which are constantly changing, that means, Dehendriya Gunanu Karmani, which means that body, the mind, the senses, and the three modes of material nature which is working through them, due to the influence of the modes of nature, body, mind and senses continuously changing. That means it is due to the change in the modes of nature that we are acting differently in different times in life. Is it not? Like you can see, the body acts in a particular way in the childhood. It acts in a different way in the boyhood. It acts in a different way in the youthhood. And it acts in a different way in the old age. Why these changes are happening in the body? Due to the changes in the modes of nature in the body. Changes in the modes of nature in the body. The modes of nature is demanding from us these changes. And accordingly the body is resonating with that. Is reacting to the changes in the modes of nature. Similarly, you can see that is called Sharira Dharma. Sharira Dharma means activities of the body. Then if you take the Manodharma, activities of the mind, and the activities of the, and the modes of nature, how it changes the mind. The modes of nature changes the mind as well, is it not? It changes in such a way that you can notice yourself that in the modes of goodness you act in a particular way. In modes of passion you act in a different way. And modes of ignorance you act in another way. So three modes of nature influences the body, it influences the mind as well. Apart from that, the three modes of nature, in the awakened state there is more satugunam in the body. In the dream state it is completely under the control of the Swapnam, is under control of Rajasam. Rajasic activities influences the Swapnam state, dream state. And when you go into the deep sleep state, you are influenced by the dream state, deep sleep state, influenced by the Tamogunam, isn't it? For mode of ignorance, in other words. So the three modes of nature is also resonating according to the states of existence. Jagrat Swapnam Sushupti, Satugunam Rajogunam Tamogunam. And they interact each other, and accordingly we experience that in this body, mind and intelligence and senses, not in the self. So here you can see that all our vyavaharam in this world is within this circle. That means modes of nature operating within the three states, and in these two interactions we conduct all our business in this world, what is called vyavaharam. So, in the Brahma Sutram Bhashyam, Ajari Swamiji wrote this very explicitly. He said, you are thinking that you can develop knowledge in these conditions. That's what he is asking us. How are you going to develop some knowledge, proper understanding in this state what you are in? He says, that is where you require the help of somebody who has got out of this problem. In necessity of a spiritual master. First of all, we have to recognize this, that our present lifestyle and situation is not very favorable for knowledge of the self. Due to the interaction of the three modes of nature with the three states of existence, and while interacting each other, all our vyavaharam in this world is going on. All our transactions in this world. Is it not? Transactions is the vyavaharam. Is going on in this world. And we are thinking, oh, I am ready for knowledge of the self. You are not ready. You don't have anywhere near to that. All this understanding is not there. Therefore, he wrote there that the first commentary he wrote was, in the Ubhodhyayam he writes this, Adhyasa Bhashyam, he calls it. Adhyasa Bhashyam. The Adhyasa Bhashyam means to explain to us our situation where we are and making us to recognize this first. Without even knowing that we are always keeping our head high, oh, I am such a deep understanding of this. What is our understanding? It in this connections between the Trimurti nature. So, if as long as this Adhyasam is, if the Adhyasam is not there, that's what he writes there. In the Brahma Sutra commentary, he says there, that if you don't have this Adhyasam, that means the modes of nature, your three states, if they are not interacting each other, and you are not superimposed anything on the self of all your activities in this world, which has come from the Vyavaharam, if you are not imposed anything on yourself, then in that means you don't have any Adhyasam. And if you don't have the Adhyasam, then you don't need the knowledge of the self. You don't need it. You're already there. You already got it. Because Adhyasam is permanent in all of us. Once you have accepted a gross material body, Adhyasam must happen. That means if you don't have Adhyasam, then you don't have to have a spiritual master. You don't need Bhagavad Gita. You don't need to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And you don't need any of these things. That's how he says there. That you don't need any of these things if there is no Adhyasam. But Adhyasam, you can't free yourself from that. It is so strong in us. We are not conscious of that. That is the problem. We are not conscious of this problem, what is existing within us. We are thinking, oh, I'm attending, we're listening very carefully, everything. So that means I have so much faith in my ears. And I have so much faith in my mind. And I have so much faith in my intelligence. What the Shastram is saying to us, your so-called body, so-called mind, so-called intelligence, so-called senses, so-called ego, all operating in this field of the three modes of material nature on one side and the three states of existence on the other side. In the middle of that, you are trying to play this game between the two, and that is called your vyavaharam in this world, all the transactions in this world. Keeping all these, you are feeling very confident that you can develop spiritually, is it not? That's his question in that. So, so that is he saying here that all these Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedantam, and all Shravanam, everything becomes important only if you are able to come out of this Adhyasam. So what has happened is that if you have no Adhyasam inside, that then it would be sufficient if you have heard this one statement that I am not this body. That would be sufficient. But why is it not working? Everybody knows who has got a Bhagavad Gita in the hand. They will read the book and they will know that I am not this body. It's there in the second chapter itself. Krishna has started the whole Bhagavad Gita with that. And then why is it not working? Why is it not working? We have to ask that question, isn't it? And that is answering to that in the Brahma Sutram commentary. Ajahnya Swamiji says there that when the Adhyasam is there, what you have got as knowledge that I am not this body, it will also have no effect practically. Because of the Adhyasam. Adhyasam is the problem. Not this. That's why first we study Dehi Nosmin Yatha Dehi. We have got the spiritual knowledge now. That's what we think. Only thing is, we are not able to tell anybody that I have got it really. All I know is the letters in the verses. What has been used? Kaumaram Yavanam Jara Tata Dehandara Prati Dheera Satra. I'm not able to say I'm that Dheera. Why? Because I know there is fear inside. So where's the question of Dheeratvam there? So here, so that is where the question comes. This body which is made of matter, dead matter, hearing that I'm not this body, should that not be sufficient? No, it is not sufficient. Why? Then the question comes, then who am I? This question has to come inside. Who am I? And because I know very well that when I'm saying I am, I know this body, isn't it? I know my body. That's how we'll say. I know what's happening to my body. I know it's getting old. I know it's getting sick. So when we talk about it, the body in this way, it implies this understanding that I am not the body, I am somebody else who knows the body very well. Remember, we talked about this many times before, but I think probably you have taken it like the story. I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not for my enjoyment. And the three justification behind it, we have spoken that before several times. And we also know what the reason why that statement like that. In the I'm not this body, body is not mine, body is not for my enjoyment. That understanding, why? It's not just a statement. Behind that statement, there is an explanation to that, why it is so. So, for example, you can see, from there everything begins. I exist. For example, this table, or this mic, or this book, does not know that it exists. But I know, I exist. Mic doesn't know it exists. Table doesn't know it exists. The book doesn't know it exists. Bag doesn't know it exists. But I know I exist. Isn't it? The awareness of my existence. Awareness of my existence. What is the reason behind it? Because this is called Jadam. This is called Jadam. This is called Jadam. I'm called Chaitanyam. That is the difference. There is that living force inside me all the time telling me, reminding me that I, awareness in me, existing all the time. And that is why I'm able to say to others, my body is giving me trouble. I'm going to die one day. When we are making all these statements, we are not conscious that this body with which I am identifying with is not the one who is speaking. It's somebody else who is speaking from inside, who is thinking that this body is mine and therefore I am identifying with the body. I am this body, body is mine, body is for my enjoyment. That person who is thinking like that is making that statement. So therefore, because it is like that, the actual word used is dharma. Dharma means that the mic, the table, the book, they don't know who they are. There is no awareness in them, isn't it? They are matter. There is no awareness in them. In me, there is awareness. And because of this awareness in me, I have this knowledge in me of what is happening here. And because there is no awareness in the mic, book or the table, whatever that happens, they don't know anything what's happening. Because there is no awareness in them. There is awareness in me, isn't it? So, who is becoming aware of the body? That's me. That's I am. Isn't it? So, similarly, when something happens in the vyavaharam, in this world, sometimes you are feeling happy, sometimes you are feeling unhappy, distressed about it, isn't it? So, who is actually knowing this? We think the effect of that is in the mind. When the happiness or distress comes to us, effect of that is in the mind. But behind that mind, there is someone else who makes the mind to experience that. That means whenever something is experienced in this world, that experience of that, somebody has to know that this has happened. That's so it is that awareness that is comes in the friend who experiences that, and who gives the experience, transmits that into the mind, and mind reports that, oh, this is good, this is bad. Mind makes that experience. So, and what happens at that time? Instead of seeing who has experienced that, you are going and identifying with the mind, because mind is the one who is suffering. It is so fine, all these things, what's happening inside, that we are not even conscious of any of these things. We are thinking that I heard all the story, I got initiated, I got this, I got that, everything should be okay now, for the rest of the life. Yeah, it's okay for the rest of the life, that's all. After that, what will happen, nobody can guarantee you anything. For the rest of the life, it's okay. So it'll keep you going on the track. But that's not good enough. That is what it is important. Because this has happened to Lord Brahma also. Brahma made the same mistake. And then even the third candle, you will see that later. So this question came up. That this awareness inside, bodham it is called, bodham, that bodham or awareness inside is the one, the key behind all these things. If awareness is not there, the mind won't work. You are thinking mind is working, operating independently. No, mind also cannot operate independently. Intelligence cannot operate independently. Senses cannot operate independently. Body cannot operate independently. I experience, say, I've been injured or hurt by an accident or something. I feel the pain. I look at the body and I'm identifying with the body, thinking that, oh, it has happened to this body, that's why I'm feeling the pain. I look at my body because it's been hurt. I say that I'm suffering because body has been hurt. Is that not everybody does? What has happened now? You are straight away identified with the body. The person who is knowing that you have been hurt, who is transcendental to everything, you have left that identification and you have come and identified with the body and you are 100% saying to everybody, look, I have been hurt here and therefore I am feeling the pain. So where is your identification? Ask the question yourself. Where is your identification? You are not identifying with the real you. You are identifying with the body. Are you not? You are identifying with the body. And similarly, every happiness and distress in this world, when it happens and when it is experienced in the mind, you are thinking, oh, I am having a good time or I am having a bad time. And you are thinking that all these people who are giving me trouble, they should be sorted out first. Because they have done this to me. But my awareness inside, because of my, instead of identifying with the awareness inside, anandam, avabhodam, all these are, which Krishna calls in the Bhagavatam, pratyabhijna, sutralpa, various terminologies there, isn't it? Instead of identifying with the real self, when you identify with the different upadhis, upadhi means body, mind, intelligence, ego and everything, this is bound to happen. This is bound to happen. So, therefore, the activities of the body, activities of the mind, activities of the pranam, if you impose them, all of them, so, what are the activities of the body? Activities of the body, for example, you can see body is getting old, body is getting sick, body is getting sick. That's one, the activities of the body. Old age, death, disease and things like that. What is the activities of the mind? Ragam, dvesham, kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam. These are the activities of the mind. Because that's where it is experienced, is it not? Then what is the activities of the activities of the pranam? Hunger, thirst, all these things. Due to pranam we are experiencing that. So, and similarly, there is activities of the buddhi, intelligence also. What is that? Knowing something, not knowing something. That is the activities of the intelligence. Intelligence is always saying, oh, I didn't know anything about it. Sometimes you say, oh, otherwise you will say, oh, I know everything about it. You said, I know what has happened. So, intelligence is always picking on what you have known, what you have not known. Mind is always picking on the emotional level, what you are experiencing, what you are not experiencing. Body is always acting on the damage that's been done to the body or the changes that is happening in the body. Pranam is always functioning based on the hunger, thirst and things like that, which are the demands of the pranam. Pranam is demanding that you need food, you need drinks, or hunger, thirst, all these things. So you can see, looking at each one of them, body, mind, intelligence, pranam, every one of them has its own demands. And you are actually trying to keep this satisfied, these four or five things in this package. You're trying to keep that satisfied, isn't it? So, and therefore, you can see that every one of them creates its own problems in us. For example, when you know something and you don't know something, which is relationship with the body. Similarly, suppose somebody has offended you or somebody has praised you. Two opposing things, manam, avamanam. Somebody has praised you, somebody has offended you. you are feeling inside. And similarly, somebody has glorified you, somebody has insulted you. Nindastuti. There's the two words they have used there. So, all these things we are experiencing inside. And so, if you are experiencing all these things inside, in order that that has to happen inside, there must be someone inside who knows that by this external thing what has happened, the after effect of that, how it is influencing our body. Means the body or the mind or the intelligence, some of them, whatever it may be. Isn't it? So that means the person who is bringing that into the mind or into the body, in order that they react in that way, there must be a separate thing existing within us. Is it not? Is it not? There must be something that is existing within us, and that is what is called the self. The self is a very difficult thing to define. You can only explain the self in this way. Otherwise, we can say like this, like some devotees also take shelter in this. The size of the soul is 1/10,000. And then you're thinking, is there any equipment to measure the size of the soul? We have all these false impressions built up around us. Those things are spoken to show to us that self is something you have to understand in this particular way. That consider looking at the body, looking at the mind, looking at the intelligence, looking at the senses and the pranam, how each one of them interact within this creation, and how their activities are creating its own problems inside this body package. How the different things in this world cause its impact in the body. For example, the weather, it creates an impact on this body, is it not? The problem is, when the weather is having an impact on the body, there must be an awareness inside me which will sense this thing, what is happening in the weather and its impact on the body, who is able to transmit that into the mind and make me feel happy or unhappy. Is it not? For example, if the weather is very sunny, I say immediately, oh, it's a lovely day today. When I make that statement, what does that mean? That when sun is shining there, that the senses have sensed that, and the message has gone to my that awareness inside, who says to me that this, if it is put into the mind, mind will react in this particular way, saying that it's a nice day. So all these things are happening in the body, mind, intelligence, senses, prana and everything. But the one who is reporting all these things and who is monitoring all these things or sensing all these things, he is independent. He is totally independent. And that is why Anandam, that is why when we talk about the soul, soul is so independent from the body, from the mind, intelligence, everything. So, so another way if you look at it, suppose I say to you that I know all of you, but I cannot become you. I become aware of all of you only if I see you through my eyes or hear your voice or through senses if I have any contact with you, only then I am conscious of your existence. Your existence. But look at me. I don't need any certification from anybody in this world that I exist. Even the whole room is dark. There's nobody here. I may not see you, anybody here, but I will know that I am existing still. Is it not? So, so when I look at this mic, and if I come to know the existence of this mic, that means I should be separate from this mic. Isn't it? So, similarly, this mic, this body, this book, this table, and similarly, I exist separate from all these things. Separate from all these things. And that means, the way I am perceiving this mic, the way I am perceiving this table, the way I am perceiving this book, similar way, I cannot perceive myself, who I am. Who I am. What does that mean? It means, in Shastram they use these two words, Drukka Drishyam. All this is Drishyam. I am the Drukka. Famous book, Druk Drishya Vivekam. I am the Druk, everything else is Drishyam. Body is Drishyam. Body is Drishyam. Mind, intelligence, all are Drishyam. Because they act independent of me, separately from me. I input into them, they function their own way. So, therefore, Drukka and Drishyam. I am the Drashtava. Drashtava means one who is seeing. Drukka. Drukka is Drashtava. Drashtava means, or Drukka means, one who sees everything and one who knows everything. He is called Drukka. Drukka means he sees everything. Seeing means not just seeing with the eyes, not in that sense. Seeing means one who perceives everything. Whether it is through the eyes, through the nose, through the ears, through the tongue, or whatever it may be, senses, through any senses, what you are perceiving, that he is called Drukka, the one who is perceiving that. And he knows what it is. For example, if the body is an object, I am the subject. I am the subject. Is it not? I am the subject. If body is an object, I am the subject. Because everything that's happening in the body is known to me. It's subject to my knowledge. Is it not? Suppose the body is hurt, or the body is having some disease. Immediately, who is perceiving that? It's me within this body. Within this body. So therefore, I become the Drik, and the body becomes the Drishyam. Body becomes the Drishyam. And similarly, body is Jadam. I am not Jadam. Jadam means matter, dead matter. If I am also Jadam, I won't know what is happening in the body. What is happening in the body. And because I am Chaitanyam, or living force, why we are saying all these things is, to be very clear inside the difference between Chaitanyam and Jadam. Living force and the dead matter. This has to be very clear inside. So, or in other words, in the modern terminology, it's called consciousness, is it not? Consciousness. So, consciousness is the Drukka. Consciousness is the Drukka. So how can that be, that all the objects can become me? Because everything that you are experiencing here from the objects, or what is called a Drishyam. Drishyam means the whole creation, prapancham, all creation, as well as including your body, mind, everything. You will notice one thing, this is an important thing. These are all very subtle things, and they are very important also. That if you notice one thing, the main difference between Drukka and Drishyam is this. Drishyam is always subject to change. Drik never changes. Do you understand that? Do you understand that principle? That Drik is never changing. My awareness never changes. Drishyam, which means the world, the body, and everything in this creation is subject to change. If you understand this principle, this is where the rishis found out the secret of liberation. It's lying in that understanding. They found out, when I am a little baby, grown up as a little boy, grown up as in the young man, and in this old age, one thing that has not changed in me throughout is my awareness that I am existing. That was never gone up nor gone down. All the time, same way, I am existing. No operation, no surgery, no medicine, nothing can change that existence of awareness. Awareness, existence of awareness. So the rishis found out that everything is changing in the body, right? Body is changing, mind is changing, intelligence is changing, ego is changing, senses are changing, everything is changing. But this one thing in the body is not changing. What is that? Awareness. So they came to this conclusion that is the one you have to hold on to, not the changing one. Changing one is useless. If you do experiment with the changing one, what does it mean? Waste of time at the end, isn't it? That's why if you look at the telescope and the sky, today you'll find some moon somewhere, some star somewhere. Another 50 years later you are saying that, oh, it was in a different place. So many things have changed. And that is a big problem in the science. It is a big problem in the science. So that is why they are saying that rishis, with their tremendous thought power, and ability to analyze things in their mode of goodness, they came to this understanding, it is overall a waste of time to study something which is always subject to change. Therefore, they never wasted their time on Drishyam. Instead, all the attention was given to the Drikka. From that point, they found out that it is only possible to hold on to something which is permanent, and that is Drikka. Now, that word Drikka is another word for Atma. And this word Atma is another word for Krishna, or Bhagavan, or Paramatma, or Brahman. Whichever way you want to call it, you can call it. But the fact behind all these things is that permanent existence of awareness which is within me, which is in everybody in this living world, and which is the only thing that is permanent in this whole thing, not the creation. Creation is not permanent. It is continuously changing. So you can't depend on this creation. And depending on the creation to find out the truth will be a waste of time. Because material nature is constantly turning the whole thing up and down. How will you find any answer from this? So if ever you have to get to know the truth, you have to hold on to what is called Drik inside, that permanent thing inside. So that is where, from there, the rishis found out the secret of liberation. Because they realized that if we can get established in that setup of Drik, permanently established in that, then your miseries are over. All miseries are finished with that. That is what is called self-realization. This is why so much important for the self, that somehow or the other, whichever yoga process you follow, if you get eventually established in the self, that means you are established in the Drik, you know who you are, and then therefore Drishyam is not a problem anymore. Drishyam is not anymore taken into account. Drishyam goes on in its own way, because you have become the Drik. Whereas, instead if you have identified with the Drishyam all the time, everything that's happening in the Drishyam must happen to you. You can't escape from that. Say for example, the weather changing, you will be affected by the weather. Body changing, you will be affected by the body. Because why? You are not the Drik, you are the Drishyam. You have become a part of the Drishyam. So Drik and Drishyam, these two things in the Bhagavadam is given so much importance. That is why when this whole chapter, 19th chapter, when it's spoken, Parikshit Maharaj wanted to say this, the Vedavyasa Maharshi wants to say to us, a very higher principle in the Upanishads, he wanted to put it in front of us through this story of Parikshit, Shamigarishi and Sringi. That's the way you have to see it. Otherwise it won't make any sense. Otherwise this story, if you read, there was a king who lived 5,000 years ago. And that king was bitten by a snake. And he died. I understood Bhagavadam. That's the first canto. The story is only that much. There was a king. He went to the forest. He was hunting. He found a snake, dead snake. He went and asked for some water. He didn't get the water. So he got angry with him, took the snake and put it on his neck and he walked out. Then he came to his palace and he thought he did a wrong thing. So he decided to give up his body. So, and then he was told that he'll be dying within 7 days' time, bitten by a snake. So he decided to go to Ganga River and drink some Ganga water and sit there. And after 7 days' time, he died and gone. Is this Bhagavadam? Do you think this is that simple, Bhagavadam? When I say this to you, Bhagavadam's depth is too much for us to digest. We take it so simple. That's why I'm saying, if you keep on reading Bhagavadam again and again and again daily, which I don't think anybody is doing it on a regular basis, therefore these problems. That's why when I say the stories from the Katha in the Bhagavadam, this 19th chapter in the first canto, Vedavyas put forward the principle, the philosophy. And then what did he do? Remaining cantos, he showed it to us, how it is possible to come out of this Drishyam and to become the Drik. What happened to the gopis? What happened to the Ambarish Maharaj? What happened to Uddhava? What happened to Chitrakedu? And many others. That is the message. And that, because it is too subtle, we will not capture it easily. That's why you can imagine, even the first canto, one chapter, that is so much to talk about. There's so much philosophical understanding began there. So that's why this 19th chapter is so important, that ordinarily when you read that chapter, you may not feel the importance of that. So therefore it is spoken like that. So So drishtava and drishyam, or drikka and drishyam, isn't it? So here main thing to note is this: drishyam is subject to change, never remains the same, always changing. Drikka is never changes. It is from this principle that the rishis concluded that it is possible to come out of this material world. Their thoughts have gone in that direction. They concluded that if there is a thing called a drik and drishyam, and drishyam is changing and drik doesn't change, whom should we take shelter of? Should we take shelter of drishyam? Should we take shelter of drik? And that is why they are strongly saying to us, as long as you are under the grip of drishyam, you will suffer. And the moment you become identification with the drik, you are free yourself from the miseries of this world. So, and another thing is, drishyam creates emotions in us, excitement, happiness, distress. It is bound to create those reactions in us because of its nature of change. Once they are changing, the effect of the change must be there in us. Anything in this world, if it's changing, you can notice yourself. When the body is changing, there is effect of that in us. Isn't it? There's a change is experienced. Similarly, everything in the drishyam, when it changes, it has an impact on us. And that change in the drishyam is called death. We are looking at death in a different way, is it not? Actually, death is nothing but a change in the drishyam. Like world is changing, similarly changes happened in this body, which is drishyam, a change in the body, isn't it? So on the other hand, who am I? I am the person who is seeing that change when death is happening. Look at this way. Finally, when you are dying, because you are so absorbed in the body, you won't notice it, isn't it? But while living now, you can see this. I am seeing the change in the body from childhood to boyhood to youthhood, old age. All the changes that has happened in the body, I am observing that and I am conscious of that. Is it not? I'm changing. So you can see here, changes have happened in the drishyam. That is what Krishna says there. Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tata dehamdara praptir dhirastatrana mukhyati. So you have taken birth in one body, and while you are in this body, and when this body dies and goes away, what all changes have happened? That's what Krishna is saying here. So, and who noticed these changes happening in the body? That's me. Who noticed the changes that's happening in this body? That's me. And that me who noticed the changes, he had no change. That's the interesting thing. Body is changing, I've noticed the change, but the person who is noticing the change, he has not changed. Throughout the life, he is the same, that awareness. So, just like you can see, that rishis, how they found out, that is how this Vedic knowledge is based on. This is the Vedic knowledge is based on this principle. If this principle is not there, what's the meaning of all these things? A lot of stories and a lot of, you can talk about the stories, expanding them and enjoy the stories. That's a different thing. And some nice prasadam after that. It's not that. The Vedic knowledge is this, that there is a fundamental understanding to come to us, that drikha and drishyam. Drishyam is everything in this world, including the body, everything. And rishis found out this most important principle. that if there is an escape route from this mess, what we are in today, that escape route is only through the drik, not through the drishyam. That was their fundamental understanding. There is no escape route from this misery if you hang on to this drishyam. The only escape route is if you get on to the drik, number one. It is from that this word mukti or liberation has come, from this understanding. Do you know what mukti or liberation is defined in the Bhagavadam? Mukti tektva anyadha rupam swarupena vyavasthiti. This is how Bhagavadam calls it, liberation. Liberation means mukti tektva anyadha rupam swarupena vyavasthiti, which means, mukti means tektva anyadha rupam. Anyadha rupam means I am thinking I am this body. That is anyadha rupam, that's not me. I am this mind, that's anyadha rupam. I am not that mind. Or I am thinking I am the intelligence, that is anyadha rupam. So everything else is anyadha rupam. If you have given up all identification with all these things, including the other things in this world, tektva anyadha rupam, and if you are established in this drik, swarupam, swarupena vyavasthiti, where you get settled there, then you are liberated. And then you don't have to feel the miseries of this world. This is the principle. So, we are coming to that. Now we will continue after a few minutes. Chedo darpana marjanam bava mahadava agninarvavanam shrayakaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pradivada purnam radaswadhanam sarvatna svanambaram vijayade shri krishna sangirtanam Nanamagari Bahuda, the Sarva Shakti, Tatrapida, Nimida, Smarane Nagala, Eda Drishita Vakraba, Pagavan Mamavi, Nubdei Midrishamiha, Janina Nuraga, Trinada Vishuni Jena, Tarora Bisahishwana, Amanina Manadena, Kirtani Sadahi, Nathanam Majanam Nasundarim, Kavidamba Jagadishakamahi. Mama janmani janmani shwari bhavada bhaktirahe dugitvai ainandadanu jakingaram padidamam shami mamambudo tvapada pangajasti daduli sadasham vichindaya galada shudharaya vadanam gadgadruddhaya giram pulagayam jidam kadapavu tavarmam grahane pavishyadi vaidam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayidam Shunyahidam jagal sarvam govinda virahe name Nashreshava padaradam pinashtumam Adarshanam marmahadam karotuva Tadavamitathadvilam pado malpranathasunayevanaparam. So when the Rishi is found out, it is possible to get out of this misery. When they found out this, this is not an experiment which was done in a laboratory for a few days or a few months or a few years. This is a lifelong experiment conducted by many sages, and they had came to this understanding that it is possible to come out of this material existence, samsaram, what we are experiencing day after day after day in life. Fear of death, fear of old age, disease, hunger, thirst, fear, anger, frustration, pride, all kinds of excitement, emotions, everything inside. So they came to understand that it is possible to come out of this. And in their study they also found out another thing. What is that? That is also important. Just like they found out they can escape from this, they studied these three states very carefully. Which one? Vacant state, dream state and the deep sleep. They studied it so well that they came to realize that this question, who am I, is worrying them. Who am I then? If I am drik, I am not drishyam. But who am I then? If it's just saying drik is not good enough, isn't it? But drik also has its own features, characteristics. In simple terms, in the Bhagavadam and all, it will say like this, Sachidanandam. That's a simple explanation to that, Satachitanandam. But what is the nature of that Satchitanandam stage? So when they wanted to find out that, they studied these three states very extensively, And they realized one important thing, that Sachidanandam is Sachidanandam experienced at any time in our present condition. That was the question they had to ask. They noticed that in the vacant state, in the Jagrat Avastha or vacant state, the body is there, the mind is there, the intelligence is there, the ego is there, the senses are there, everything is there. When all these things are around us, I am also there. Awareness is also there. Is it not? Awareness is there, the body is there, mind is there, intelligence is there, senses are there, everything is there. That is what is generally vacant state means. Then they realized, like, let's look at the dream state. What happens then? When you go into the dream state, this thing called body is not bothering me the way it bothered me in the vacant state. Is it not? In the vacant state, it was a burden. Not when you are young, but when you get old, it becomes a burden actually. The body becomes a burden because it takes so much of your time to maintain that. How many doctors we consult? Then we have got Ayurveda, Allopathy, Naturopathy, Homeopathy, everybody in this world to look after this body. Is it not? And you become serious about it when you get older. When you are young, it doesn't matter. You just, because inside the prarabdham is working better that time, that you are able to surmount that. But when you get older, when you know that it's on its way out, everything becomes very worrying what you should do next moment. Lot of people, as you know very well, that when we get old, it is quite natural that you start thinking. Some people say we'll get a place close to a general hospital or something. So in the event anything happens, all facilities are there, all the scanning machines and all the other things for easy transportation to the hospital. And because the faith becomes less in the world and the faith becomes strong in the hospital. The outside world, we know that we are not of much use in the world outside. Whereas we will be a good customer for the general hospital. We could be permanently there. Then that's why we'll see people make it as comfortable as possible in the hospital also. You go for a blood test, you stay there comfortably for a couple of hours, have a sandwich, have a cup of tea, have a good chatting and a very warm environment, everything. So many ways in trying to make ourselves, even the hospital, as comfortable as possible. So from this you can understand that the old age brings its own problems. So here, this problem is gone if you are in the dream state. You don't have to worry about it. But dream state brings other problems. What is that? The mind. The mind brings all the problems in the dream state. What happened over 10 years in your life, it can bring it to you in 20 seconds and put it in front of you and make you feel the misery from that. All what has happened in your childhood, boyhood or youth or whatever you have got involved, something you have got involved sometime either in this life or in the previous life, everything that is stacked up inside, mind can bring it out in the dream state and put you into misery. Is it not? So notice this. In the vacant state, when you had the body, you had problem with the body. When you lost the body in the dream state, when you are talking about dream state, you have to take it this way. Dream means proper dream, not semi-dream, semi-vacant state. That is not the one we are talking about. Lot of time we are in the semi-dream, semi-vacant state. You are not even in the full vacant state at any time. Even now when you are listening to all these things, you must be thinking, I'm sure you must be thinking about the job, about the commitments you have, commitments at home, family members, or various other thoughts that is coming through the mind, which is an indication that you are not 100% in the vacant state even now. Even now you could say some people may be 70%, some people 80%. But 100% nobody is in the vacant state. Somebody must be thinking about the prasadam. Or somebody is sick, he must be thinking about the problems with the body. Then it will come natural way because the mind is functioning inside all the time, creating all kinds of thoughts inside. So therefore, 100% vacant state is also not possible. Similarly, when you go into the dream state also, 100% dream state is rare. But when you get a very heavy dream or a very sound, like they say, sound sleep, similarly a sound dream when you get it, at that time the body is not there. Gross body will not have any, you won't even know where you are. To that extent sometimes you dream, isn't it? Only when you woke up you realized, oh, you are sleeping in your bedroom. But otherwise you were in the forest or you were in a cruise or you were in the space or you were in the aeroplane, whatever it is. Even that experience you can have. So, what happened now? In the dream state you realized that these miseries are all happening within the mind. Within the mind. Body is not there, but the mind is there to give you the trouble. All the trouble. Is it not? And then, so you have a dream body. And in that dream body, you are dreaming. And you have left the gross body and you have gone into the dream body. That's what it is. And similarly, the rishi found out that when they go into the deep sleep state, when they went into the deep sleep state, where you have lost your identification with the gross body, you have also lost your identification, mind is also gone. What to say about body and the mind? Even the very I who was enjoying and suffering in the vacant state and the dream state, he has also gone. He has also gone, which is called ahankaram, ego. So, body gone, mind gone, ahankaram gone. When all the three things have gone, in your deep sleep state, which is called a sushupti, what happened? What happened in the sushupti? All you know about sushupti is, it was a great time. It was the time when you never got any problems of this world. Any problems of this body, any problems in the mind, but total happiness. Now, from this, the rishis understood, if there is an experience like that coming in the deep sleep to us, if you are experiencing something like that in the deep sleep, there must be something who knows about that experience. Who knows about that experience in the deep sleep. That is why, as soon as you wake up in the morning from a deep sleep, immediately you are able to say that, I had a good sleep at night. I enjoyed that sleep very well. Because somebody at that time was noticing this, the happy state of that happiness that you are experiencing, and that happiness which is coming without the body, without the mind, without the intelligence, without the ego, without the senses, free from all these things, experiencing simply happiness, uninterrupted by anything else in this world, and able to report it back when you come back into the vacant state in the morning. So who is that who experienced it and who reported that back? That's me. And this is from there sannyasa ashram was found out. This is how sannyasa ashram. Sannyasa ashram has not found out, okay, Krishna came here one day and told all of us, look, you are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. You are Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyasa. You have this saffron cloth and wear the dhoti in this way and hold a danda. You are a sannyasi. That is not sannyasam. Krishna sannyasam, how Krishna explains that based on this understanding, what does sannyasam means? Sannyasam means that your connection with the body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, everything has gone, and you have started experiencing this happiness, what you are experiencing in the deep sleep state, you are able to bring that into your vacant state. That is sannyasam. This is how sannyasam was invented. Otherwise sannyasam, what does it mean? It's not somebody wears a suit, he is a sannyasi, and somebody wears an ordinary clothes, he is not a sannyasi. No, the classification is not like that. It's all based on the experiences that's happening inside. That as soon as one comes to understand that in the deep sleep state, in the sushupti state, it is what happens at that time, a sannyasi, that is why if you study the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you will find all these things there which we talked about. Moksha Sannyasa Yogam, Krishna calls it, isn't it? What is the title of the 18th chapter? Moksham Sannyasa Yogam. Moksham and Sannyasam are not two different things. That is why he called it Moksha Sannyasa Yogam. Remember, the title of the 18th chapter is Moksha Sannyasa Yogam. Why did he call it Moksha Sannyasam? Because Sannyasam means Moksham. Moksham means Sannyasam. In Sannyasam state, you should experience Moksham. Otherwise, what is the Sannyasam? There is no sannyasam. So you can understand from this, the subtle principle behind it, the rishis found out that in that moksham or liberated state, this should be the state of that person. That's why we say sannyasis are liberated. Sannyasis are liberated. From that viewpoint, if he is in that state, they are liberated. But if sannyasi is thinking that when I am getting sick, I should have the best treatment in the best hospital in the world, and if the sannyasi is thinking, I need such a good care because I am a sannyasi, then what sannyasam is that? Where is the sannyasam there? Try to see that point also. When you analyze sannyasam, it is very easy to say to people, look, he is a sannyasi, so he gives the best care in this world. But the excellent sannyasis, when they left the body, what did they say? What did they say? You have to ask the excellent sannyasis when they left the body. They said that, I have nothing to do with this body. Let the body go its own way. It is not bothering me. If a sannyasi is able to say this, he is a sannyasi. Otherwise, he is not a sannyasi. It's just another dress. That's all. If a person is able to say at the time of leaving the body that this body is having its way, I have nothing to do with it. Instead, I am not that body. There's nothing bothering me about this body. So why bother about it? Why you come? I want to. Many people have said this. They didn't have the clothes of the sannyasi. They were in their white clothes, ordinary people. But they said this at the time of leaving the body, and they were sannyasis. They are the sannyasis, real sannyasis, who are able to say to the world, because what happens when you are leaving the body, if you are a big famous sannyasi and all that, you will have a lot of disciples, they will come, and the disciples will try to bring you the best doctors from the best hospitals in the world, best consultants, and there will be a lot of wealth pouring in to take you to the best hospital, and best care, everything. And all the disciples will be thinking, oh, by doing all these things, he will take me also there. He himself hasn't got there. How is he going to take you there? How can he do it? That is the question, isn't it? He himself is in the same problem like you, in the same boat. And how can he save you from that? Whereas, and therefore, all these disciples will come around you and waste your time. And the guru is also thinking, then look, they are working anyway, they are doing their best what they can. Pray for me. Guru is telling the disciples, pray for me. You tell the whole world to pray for me. Let the whole everybody, engage everyone in my service. But real sannyasi would not think like that. He is saying that, why are you bothered about this body? That's a word he should tell us who are following him. Why you worry about this body? I am not that body. Let the body go its way. I go my way. Like Parikshit did to Shukabrahmarshi. That is proper spiritual life. Otherwise everything else is bogus. It's a waste of time. So you can understand, from this one experience in the deep sleep state, the rishis invented what is called sannyasashram. And from this experience of drikka and drishyam, rishis invented what is called the escape from this material misery. This is how Vedic philosophy is founded on all these principles. These are the very fundamental principles which you cannot change, no matter which parampara you come from or which tradition you come from. It doesn't matter. These principles are underlying principles for all paramparas, for all time to come, forever, from beginning to end it is. From there, other different acharyas have built up different understanding of Advaitam, from Advaitam, Vishishta Advaitam, Dvaitam, Shuddha Advaitam, Kevala Advaitam, all other kinds of things. They have come up later. But these fundamental principles of the rishis, who established everything based on this understanding, Drikka and Drishyam, Jagrat Sapnam Sushupti, the Sushupti state of consciousness, what is happening? They invented and they found this out, that in Sushupti state, what have they noticed? They noticed that when there is no body, there is no mind, there is no intelligence, there is no ego, there is no senses, there is an experience at that time, and that experience is simply knowledge at that time. But due to presence of tamogunam in the deep sleep state, you are not able to see that, what's happening there. Because tamogunam is overpowering that, and therefore you do not know who is experiencing that happiness of the deep sleep. That's why. So that's why when you come back to the vacant state, which is more goodness than in the deep sleep state, As soon as you came to the vacant state, in that goodness, you are able to sense it straight away, that there was a good time in the deep sleep state. But while in deep sleep, you couldn't identify it. Why? Because of the presence of tamogunam. You are still under the modes of nature. You have not come out of it. So, here, let's go back to the story. What Vedavyasa is trying to tell us. He's saying to us that say, I'm getting old, and all the traces are there of that happening. We also say that we notice that. We say about the tree is growing, plants are growing. But we don't say we are growing, we say we are getting old. We notice that. We say we are growing, we are getting old, we say. But when you're talking about the tree, or talking about the plant, say the tree is growing. So, so while taking this birth, and while the body takes birth and body dies, within that, there is these six changes that happens. Shad parinamam, it's called. That means it takes birth, grows for some time, then it has its byproducts, it starts decaying, and eventually death. Six kinds of changes, shad parinama bhedam. It is in the Bhagavatam. Prahlad talks about that. Prahlad Maharaj says that while talking about the body and the soul separately. He talks about that, isn't it? So, when all these things are happening, the awareness inside me is conscious of all these things. I'm born, I'm growing, I'm getting old, I have these changes in the happening in the body, and middle age, old age, and eventually deterioration happening. You will know at some point in life, you will know the body is on its way out. And then what happens? You start thinking, there's not much I can do about it. It's on its way out anyway. So then you start, up to that point, to some extent you will go and do what is possible in this world. This doctor, that doctor. But one day or the other, you will give up. Is it not? We have to give up. We have no choice there. Because it will not work. Because finally you start realizing that it's not going to work anymore. So therefore, it's the end. And that end is the death. What we call as the death. So who is experiencing all these changes happening? That's me. My awareness inside. I'm aware of all these things, what's happening inside. If it is like that, is there any changes happening to my awareness at that time? No. I am changeless. That awareness is fully aware of everything what's happening, but awareness itself is not having any change. Is it not? It's not having any change. Therefore you can see, the change in the body is noticeable. And why? Because body is limited by two things, time and space. Is it not? Body is generally limited by two things, time and space. But me, the awareness, is Chaitanyam, living force. Body is limited by time and space. But my identity, the awareness, is Chaitanyam, or living force. I am Drik, not Drishyam. And because I am aware of all these changes happening in this whole package, that I don't change. Because I don't change, I am aware of it. If I am changing along with the body, my awareness also, then how will I notice it? Is it not? That makes sense, isn't it? That suppose body is changing, mind is changing, intelligence is changing. Because me inside, the awareness is not changing, that is why the awareness is able to notice these changes happening in the body. Instead, if the awareness is also changing, then how will the awareness be able to report about the changes that's happening in the body and the mind? That is why Drik is never changes, and that one which doesn't change is eternal. And because it doesn't change, it's beyond, it transcends time and space, it's living force. So without trying to know about that me, who is beyond time and space, who doesn't go through and change, I have forgotten about him. And what happened? I have identified with this changing body. This thing is called adhyasam. This thing is called adhyasam. So adhyasam is one three-letter word, But through that three letters, it carry so much of spiritual knowledge with that. That adhyasa means that without knowing me, who is actually that awareness inside. Sandram, anandam, avabhodam. That's what it is. Anandam, avabhodam. That is the very nature of that Atma inside. Not knowing his identity, which I am, not knowing that, I have, because it is unchanging and which is eternal, without knowing that, I have identified with something which is constantly changing, and not only I identified with that, I find Dehabhimanam. Dehabhimanam means that you identify with something and you feel pride in that. That I am beautiful, I am young, I am old, I am an engineer, I am a medical doctor, or I am a lawyer, or whatever, I am an officer, I am this, I am that. Whatever it may be, all that is Dehabhimanam. Remember what Lord Shiva says to Sri Parvati? Shiva says to Sri Parvati, don't go to Daksha's sacrifice. Why? He is a Dehabhimani, he says. He is not on the platform of spiritual life. That's how Shiva puts it to him. Shiva says, if you go there, you will have problem. Daksha is Dehabhimani. Don't listen to him, he says. A very straight warning to Sri Parvati. But Sri Parvati didn't capture the message. She went. And then you know what happened after that. That is, in the Bhagavatam, it is very explicitly stated that Lord Shiva is saying to, because Daksha, what was the proof that Daksha has Dehabhimanam? When Daksha walked into that sacrificial arena, everybody got up. Remember this in the fourth canto. Everybody got up. Lord Shiva didn't get up. Deliberately, Shiva wanted to teach a lesson to Daksha. Shiva says, I don't look at Daksha through the body. I see that Antaryami present inside. And Shiva is in that state, so he could say that. But Daksha took it in the other way. He thought, why doesn't he not get up? After all, he is my son-in-law. Son-in-law should offer respect to the father-in-law, isn't it? He should have got up. And Sri Parvati even fell into that illusion to some extent to say to Lord Shiva that you should not have created all this problem for me. That it is very difficult for the daughter to, if the father and husband and the father-in-law becomes inimical, what will she do? She wants both, isn't it? She wants the father and she wants the husband also. So she has to keep the both together. So she was trying to do that. But Shiva said no. There's no point in talking to him. Shiva noticed that straight away. Dehabhimani. Daksha is Dehabhimani. That Dehabhimanam is this. Daksha is thinking, I'm the head of all the Prajapatis. It's not much different than somebody thinking, I'm the Prime Minister, I'm the President. Where is the difference? Same thing, in another form, that's all. So that is what is Adhyasam. And this Adhyasam present in someone is called Ajnanam. When the Adhyasam is present in someone, it is called Ajnanam. And this Parikshit is an example of that Ajnanam. You see, Parikshit is the representative or the representation of this Ajnanam or Adhyasam at this moment, in this chapter, at this moment. Later on he gets released from this, that's later. But right at this moment, Vedavyasa is presenting to us Parikshit like this, that he is embodiment or actually a representation of this Adhyasam or Ajnanam in a person. That is the reason when he went and asked for the water, he got angry because of that. And he started lamenting about that later. And he felt very miserable about it for what he has done. And he felt hunger and thirst while he was in the forest. All these are an indication of the state of Parikshit. To tell us, Parikshit is the representative of this Adhyasam or Ajnanam in this world. And there is another person sitting there next to him. Who? Shamigha Rishi. Is it not? If you look at him, one who has none of these. Shamigha Rishi did not have hunger or thirst. That is why in the Bhagavatam you see Saram Saram Samudradam, only the essence is spoken. It is up to us to extract the message from that by studying it properly, reading it every day, thinking about it and giving time to it. Otherwise it won't happen. Otherwise it will be like the other way, as I said before, that you read Bhagavatam, yes, I got all the stories, I got my Bhakti Shastri and I got my Bhakti, whatever title it is, and I know everything now. That will be the state. It won't happen anything. But here you can see that Parikshit is representative of that Ajnanam or Adhyasam. Shamiga Rishi, exactly opposite. Not affected by hunger and thirst, not affected by lamentation, or not affected by anger or anything like that. So one who has gone beyond all these things, Sanatrayat Param Praptam Brahma Bhodam Avikriyam, that is his state. That is the way he is. So keep these two people next to each other and think about them in depth. In depth, analyze them. Parikshit has not reached the state of Shamiga Rishi. Parikshit is in a very, very low state. Shamiga Rishi is totally transcendental to everything. And in after 7 days, Parikshit reached the same state as Shamiga Rishi. That is what has happened. After 7 days, Parikshit reached the same state as Shamiga Rishi. As Shamiga Rishi. So, so the person due to whom, which means Shamiga Rishi, due to whom Parikshit got the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Had Parikshit not got angry with Shamiga Rishi and put this dead snake around his neck, this would not have happened. Bhagavatam would not have happened. So the person whom he offended, whom he felt he offended, with whom he got angry, with whom he got so upset and put the dead snake around his neck, that person reached the same state as the person in whose neck he put the snake. He came to that state after 7 days. Parikshit. Shamiga Rishi, who was not affected by any of these things, you have to see the greatness of that personality, Shamiga Rishi. When all these things happened, that Parikshit is saying this after 7 days, had I not done that to Shamiga Rishi, put the snake on his neck, I would not have got upset. Had I not got upset, and Sringi would not have cursed me. If Sringi hasn't cursed me, I would not have gone to Ganga River. Had I not gone to Ganga River and sat there to give up my body, all these rishis would not have come. And if I had not sat there and the rishis hadn't come, I would not have heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shushruta Brahmarshi. And if I had not heard Shushruta Brahmarshi, I would not have become like Shamiga Rishi. Look at this, what has happened in his life. 7 days before, he thought Shamiga Rishi is his enemy. Isn't it? Vengeance, revenge in him. Because he upset me. He didn't offer me respect. He says he is a rishi. What kind of rishi is this? Parikshit is asking all these questions and he got angry with him. And due to that anger, it manifested through the body in the form of throwing the snake on his neck. And now after 7 days, what is he saying? That it is by his mercy that I have come to the same state as Shamiga Rishi. That is spiritual life. That is spiritual life. That spiritual life is like this. Initially you think everybody is your enemy in this world. He is giving me trouble. She is giving me trouble. That man has done this to me. That man has always been like that to me. Everybody is my enemies in this world. I will teach him a lesson. Before I die in this world. And that is in the world outside. Within the family, everybody is enemy each other. Husband is thinking, she has been with me whole life to give me this much trouble. She never let me go. Only when I die, I'll get out of this problem. Or she is thinking, what kind of husband is this? He doesn't do anything right. It's been a burden on me whole life. It's become a complete problem for me. Because wife is thinking like that. Children are thinking, they are all useless, these parents. They don't understand anything. Look at us, we know how to do the Facebook, how to do the Twitter, how to do the Instagram, everything we know. These oldies, they don't know anything. The children are thinking like that. So when you try to say something to them, they ignore you completely, losing that you should be taken straight away into a care home. So who is right in this? Who is correct in all these things? So Shamiga Rishi, whereas what happens in spiritual life, and then we all part each other. Family life is over with that. Once this has happened in family life, initially it's all very bright and looking good. But towards the end you will start noticing the whole thing falling apart in one way or the other. When it starts falling apart, you will start realizing that it was all very nice when we got married. It was all looking very good. Money was there, plenty of enjoyment, plenty of holidays, everything. At the old age, when everybody gets sick, and one goes in one care home, another one goes in another care home, children says, we have no time, we are too busy in our life. They are busy with their plans and enjoyment. So after all, you are thinking, what is it all about? At the end, the thoughts will come at the end. But look at spiritual life, how it takes you. Parikshit realized this, that what is going wrong in his life. And he took the decision that unless I analyze this life properly, in the proper way, and come to this understanding that there is nothing in this world worthwhile worrying about and running after. And that brought vairagyam to him, and he decided to give up this very body which has done this abominable thing of offending Shamiga Rishi. And the very anger and hate and vengeance what he felt towards Shamiga Rishi all disappeared, and finally Parikshit himself came to that state of Shamiga Rishi at the end. Is it not? That is what this first canto is pointing out to us. First canto is telling us. So you have this story also, that he was able to say, let the snake take the body. That's all the Takshaka wants. My body, isn't it? He can have it. We have no problem. You remember in the sixth canto, there is another story like this. Dadiji, Maharshi, King Dadiji. What happened to Dadiji? Indra wanted to make the weapon, which is called the thunderbolt. To make that, he was told that you should get this backbone, the spine of Dadiji. So Indra goes, Indra is such a nice person sometimes. He goes to Dadiji and says to Dadiji, pays obeisances, everything, and then asks him, can you give us your spine, please? We want to make a weapon with that. Because they know that Dadiji has standed Narayana Kavacham for many, many years and perfected that. So all the bones, everything has got that potency. And the solution was, Dadiji was, Indra was told, that if you get a weapon made with that spine of Dadiji, or anybody who had that, particularly Dadiji's Maharshi, so go and ask him, he said. Indra says, how can I ask for somebody's spine? Even other parts of the body people are asking now, isn't it? Kidney, liver and all other kinds. But spine is a little bit too much. Kidney, at least you can have got two, you can give one. Or things like that. But spine, if you ask, is the very one on which the whole house is built. The main thing. So he says, how can you ask that? So he says, no, you ask him, he will give it to you, he said. So he goes, paid obeisances, and says to Dadiji, would you mind giving us your spine? Dadiji laughed at him when he asked this question. How dare you are to ask this question, to go and ask somebody. Dadiji says to him, it's all right. If this will solve your problem, I'll give it to you. Wait for a few minutes, he said. Dadiji sat there and that I will leave this body. After I leave this body, you can take the spine from my body. And completely absorbed in his Ashtanga Yogam, he practiced. And he was in a position like Sati Devi gave up the body in front of Daksha. In a similar way, he practiced yoga process and gave up this body. Dadiji gave up the body and told him that you can take the spine now from the body, and left the body. And so if you have to give up the body like that, you have to be somebody outside this body. Is it not? If you are the body, you can't do it, can you? But the fact that you are able to tell somebody you can have the body, that means you must be somebody outside this body. You must be something outside this body. But our problem, what is that? We are thinking we are this body. We are thinking this body. So everything what we are doing is for the sake of the body. Are we not? There, for example, whatever we would do in this world is for the sake of the body. And the activities of this body We are imposing that on the
awareness,
on the self. That's what we are doing. And that is why Acharya Swamiji says in that Ubodghadam, he says this, that when you have imposed the dharmam or the activities of the body on the self, what has happened? You became a man, you became a woman. Or you became an older person. Or you started identifying, I am the son of such and such a family person, son or daughter. Or I am a husband or I am a wife. Or I am any other designation in this world. All this has happened when? When the moment you have imposed activities of the body or the activities of the mind, everything on your awareness, that moment you have become the body. You have become the body. And then all other things followed that. I am a husband, I am a wife, I am a daughter, I am a son, I am an uncle, I am an aunt, and all other family connections. And then in the society, I am a president, I am a prime minister, I am an engineer, I am a doctor, I am a professor, I am a lawyer, whatever it may be. All these things is all in relationship with the body, nothing to do with the awareness inside, and with the awareness inside. Is that not what we talk about us when we are introducing ourselves to somebody? How do we introduce? So everyone, everything in this world is all based on the body. So, but rishis found out, when you are in the deep sleep state, who are you? They ask this question. In that deep sleep state, who are you? You are not the husband. You are not the wife. You are not the son. You are not the daughter. You are not the grandfather. You are not the father. You are not the mother. You are not the president. You are not the engineer. You are not the prime minister. You are nothing. None of these things. See how deeply they have analyzed this issue. All designations gone away from there. And is there anybody there in the depth, in that sleep? Nobody there. There is nobody there. There is no engineer, there is no doctor, there is no professor, there is no lawyer, there is nothing there. So what happened was, in that deep sleep state, you have dismantled yourself from all the designations, what you have. All your designations you have dismantled in the deep sleep state. So, at that time, what were you then? Simply bliss, isn't it? That happiness that you were experiencing inside. And that is being reported by the awareness inside. And that is what we are. That is what we are. Actually, that's all. Chidananda Rupam Shivoham Shivoham. Nothing else. There is no other identity for us. No mind, no pranam, no intelligence, no ego, no senses, no body, and no other material designations of this world. None of them is me. None of them is me. This is the only fundamental principle in the Vedic philosophy. That so, that is my real identity. That awareness what I was experiencing. And unless you get established in that state, you have to suffer in this world. That's a guaranteed thing. Till you get established in that state, who you are, only then you can say you are liberated from this misery. And that is called Jivan Mukti. While living in this world, if you are established in that state, you are already liberated. That is called Jivan Mukti state. So, not after death. Not after death. Because after death, you don't know what is happening, do we? It's easy to give you a post-dated check. Similarly, if I tell somebody that, oh, you will be liberated after death, everything will be okay. What does it mean? What does it mean? He won't be there to find out what happened to you after that, because he himself doesn't know where he will be. The one who is telling you that after death everything will be okay, it's a false thing. In the sense that initially when you come to spiritual life, you have to say like that. Because when you are very fed up in this world, at least you will feel there's some relief after death. That's the only relief you get from that. The person who has told you, he has not gone and seen that. What happens after death? You have also not seen that. And he is telling you that everything will be okay after death. So you can only guarantee that much to that extent. If it is not happening here now, all this knowledge in the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, you can't take it more serious than anything else. It's not in this world. So you can see, due to this aravanam, aravanam means this superimposition, what has happened? You are saying all the time, I got fat, I got slim, and I'm good looking, I'm very ugly, and I belong to this caste or higher family, I belong to higher varnam, or I'm a sannyasi, I'm a vanaprastham, grihastha. All these things has nothing to do with the awareness. It's all deha dharma. It's all in identification with the body, isn't it? So, you can see the problem. As long as you have this dehabhimanam, identification with the body, you will have, automatically, you will be identifying with your ashramam, you will be identifying with your varnam, you will be identifying with your caste or jati or whatever it is. All those things are existing only when you have dehabhimanam. If you have dehabhimanam, then you will identify as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or you will identify as Brahmachari, Grahastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam, or you will identify as any of the thousands of castes that is available in the whole creation. From every state to state you go, there is hundreds of castes, one caste state to another. So you will, all these castes, these varnam, this ashramam is all there only because of this dehabhimanam, isn't it? While you are sleeping in the deep sleep state, there is no dehabhimanam. Dehabhimanam is not there. You can see, even when you are in the unconscious state, dehabhimanam is not there. When you are in the unconscious state, isn't it? So, in the samadhi state, like Shaniga experienced there, that because he is so established in who he is, he has no dehabhimanam. No identification with the body. That is important lessons to learn there. So, Shamigha Rishi in the Turiyam state, when he had gone beyond these three states, because he is established in Krishna, he is established in the Atma, or he is established in the Self. It doesn't matter what you call it. The experience is the same. That gopis also got to the same state at the end. We will say, oh, gopis went to the spiritual world and they are having a great time. That is not how you see that. If you look into Bhagavatam and carefully read through, you will see what gopis had to say at the end to Krishna. After Krishna delivered them from this bodily identity and took them to the spiritual platform and they got established there. Initially, Krishna sent Uddhava to speak to gopis, isn't it? In the 47th chapter in the 10th canto. When Uddhava came back and Krishna asked Uddhava, what happened? Uddhava says, I have spoken to them everything what you have told me. But it wasn't enough. That was the reason. Second time, Krishna called the gopis separately in Samanda Panchakam when they came for the solar eclipse. And there, straight this knowledge was given to gopis by Krishna. If you look into Bhagavatam, you can see this. There, Krishna says to the gopis, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. These three states, Nivrto, Gunavartaya, but Sakshal Vilakshano Jiva, Sakshityana Vinishchida, says to the gopis, you are that Sakshi who was witnessing Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, Sattvagunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam. You are a witness to all these things, but you are different from all of that. Krishna had to say this to the gopis at the end. Even after Uddhava has spoken to the gopis, gopis haven't really fully caught on to that. They felt a lot of relief after Uddhava has spoken. But still they were lamenting later that Krishna has been separated from us. But after Krishna spoke to Samanda Panchakam to gopis, they never felt that they were separated from Krishna anymore. Why? Gopis were established in that state of who they were. Atma. Krishna is Atma. Krishna is not different from that. So as soon as they realize that, there is no separation from Krishna. So you can understand that we go to sleep in the deep sleep state, like Shamigha Rishi gets established. In the deep sleep state, we also experience that. No identification with the body in the deep sleep state. But as soon as you wake up, the bodily identification all comes back. Dehabhimanam comes back. So from this you can understand, when there is no bodily identity, or when there is no dehabhimanam, It is at that time that we are in our pure state of existence. That is what is called the spiritual existence or awareness, and that awareness is pure. And it is in that state you realize that you exist everywhere, not only in this body. You exist in everywhere, and that is the state of Shugha Brahmarshi. Remember this? Tam sarva bhuda hridayam munimanatosmi. Remember this? That yasvanubhavam akila shruti saramegam adhyalpa deepam adhititirshadam tamondham samsarinam karunayaha purana guhyam tam vyasasonam ubayami gurum muninam. The verse before that. What was that? Yam pravrajandam anubedam abedakrityam dvaipayano virahagadaram ajuhavam putredi tanmayda yattaravobhinedu tam sarvabhudahdayam munim anathosmi. That one line is enough to what we have talked about all this time. Tam sarvabhudahdayam munim anathosmi. That means in that spiritual state, when you are established in that spiritual platform, you are present in everybody as Atma, and that Atma is one. Tam sarvabhuda hridayam munim anatosmi. That realization came to him. So, that is what he is saying here. And if you are in that state, then whatever activities the body is doing, the mind is doing, intelligence is doing, it will have no impact on the self. Because you are there, you got there, that's where you are, isn't it? So, just like if you look at the sky from here, you look there, you see that the sky is ending far away. Somewhere else the sky ends. There you feel like that. If you go there and look, you see the sky never ends there. It goes, keep on going from there. And if you look at this way, you'll see the sky ends here. So, where is the problem? Why does he feel that the sky finishes at all other places? Now, I'm saying, I'm looking at the sky, I'm thinking I'm right in the middle of the sky. All around is coming to an end, closes everywhere. Isn't it? So from this you can understand that this aropanam, like the way I have imposed everything on the self, is a false thing and due to my ignorance. And therefore it is called false allegation. It's a false allegation. So what have we done now? Krishna, who is present in all of us, who is our very Atma, on whom we have imposed all these things. Isn't it? If Krishna is present inside as the Atma, and all these things, false allegation on Krishna. That is why in the Bhagavatam, when that incident happened with Satrajit and Prasena and Satyabhama, you remember that Satrajit was saying that Krishna has killed Prasena. Killed Prasena and spread this news all around the Dwaraka. Krishna thought that Atma, which is Krishna, never can have any kind of false allegation on him. So I have to prove that Atma is above all the false allegations. That is why he deliberately took the initiative to go to the forest to find out where the Samantaka jewel is. In that process he found out that Prasena was killed, and then the lion has taken the jewel from Prasena, took it to the cave, Jambavan killed the lion and took the Samantaka jewel. Krishna got back and fought with Jambavan and got the Samantaka jewel back, brought it back and handed it over to Satrajit. That story is famous, isn't it? Which we have seen before. What does it all mean? It means that you cannot impose falsely anything on Krishna. Why? Because he is the Atma of everybody. And if you impose anything falsely on Atma, that is adhyasam, that means you must suffer. It is this principle that has been explained through that. That if you falsely impose things on Krishna, who is the soul of everyone in this creation, every living entity, plants, trees, bees, birds, human species, every species, whatever you want to take, in all of them, as the living force inside is Krishna. And if you impose falsely anything on that, you are ajnani, you are in avidya. You are ajnani. That means there is no, you are in ignorance, you are in avidya. That is what they are saying there. So here you can see that then you have to prove that. You have to prove that you are not imposing anything from him. That is what when you come out. So unless you come to that state, yathart, a pure swarupam or bodham, and you will notice also that pure awareness inside has no birth or death, has no old age or disease. Birth, death, old age and disease is for whom? For the body, is it not? Not for the awareness inside. And what is that awareness inside? Because now, what is my greatest fear? When death happens, what will happen to me? Isn't it? Why is this fear? Because I'm identifying with the body. Is it not? But if you are moved away from the body and got established in the self, then this will not happen. This will not. The fear of death is over. And if I do not exist, and you can see, for example, nobody wants to die. Isn't it? Nobody wants to die. Why is that? Why is it like that? Everybody knows that the body is the one that is going to die. We all know that. For that you don't have to study Srimad Bhagavatam, do you? To know that the body is going to die. Everybody knows in this world body is going to die. You don't need to know Srimad Bhagavatam for that. But at the same time, I don't want to die. This is our dilemma. We know very well that we are all going to die. Everybody has to die. Everybody knows that. But we don't want to die. So, knowing that body is going to die one day, knowing that body is going to die one day, and at the same time, thinking that I am this body, and I want to live in this world forever, eternally, and that is what we desire. Knowing that body is going to die one day, and at the same time, I am identifying with this body very strongly, and I want to live in this world forever. Is that not true? Every one of us is not different, isn't it? And this mentality is called no discrimination power. When one has no proper discriminative power, this is how that person will think. This is called another side of ajnanam. Ajnanam has various facets on us. This is one of that. What is that? I know body is going to die. I don't need any Bhagavatam or anybody for that matter. Every day you are seeing that people are leaving this world. New ones are coming in. When they come in, they think we are on the top of the world. After a while, they also go. Another one comes, another set comes. Isn't it? Know-it-all type comes in. And then they take control of the world. And they start managing. And one day, they are also thrown out. Another one comes in. So, observing these things is more than enough. You don't need to study Bhagavatam. That body will go. Body will go one day. But, that's one side. Other side, I have identified with this body 100% in everything, what I am doing. I must be happy in my life, in this body. I must be having a good household and life. I must have a good job. I must have everything good in this world. Everywhere, all the boxes you can tick that you have done well at the end. So, if you are in that state, these two things are not compatible. Identifying with the body and at the same time, you want to live eternally in this world. It will not happen. That is the first thing. That is the first thing to realize. And in order to do that, and this mentality, if you see that in a person, that is due to what is known as avivekam or lack of discrimination. No vivekam. This is why in the Viveka Chudamani begins with this. That if you have this mentality, there is no hope, he says. If you have this mentality, and then you come to spiritual life, you are saying, I have done this, I have done that, I have done that. You have done so many things, but you are still the same donkey as you started. No difference at all. Because this is the donkey mentality. The donkeys don't want to change, It gets beaten all the time. And donkey says, this is my karma, what can I do? And he goes on with it. Whole life, isn't it? Similarly, we also get beaten whole life. And at the end still I'm saying, is there a way of living here still some more time? That's the mind going in that direction. That's not possible. That is, that mentality is called lack of discrimination. So when we say that we, there is a famous verse to talk about this, and you will see this in Bhartahari's Vairagya Shatakam also, and he explains this in depth, in a lot in detail, this mentality in the human society like this. So, is that not what scientists are telling us? They're saying that you will live eternally. We are still working on that. They're saying they've been working on this for the last how many years? They haven't got very far, have they? Only thing is they managed to get the pension age from 60 to 65 or 68. And government is saying, you know, we are living longer now. So don't pay your, we don't get give you pension now. That's the only conclusion from this, what we got. So those who, some people are saying, somebody told me like this also. They were thinking that they could retire at 60. Suddenly one fine morning, Chancellor said, no, we have raised it to 65 now. So this is another 5 years I have to, what do you call, the slogging, another 5 more years. And when you get there, they'll say, no, you're still longer now. Make it 70. What is it? What kind of intelligence is this? See what Krishna is saying to us, that if you have this mentality that you will live and you don't want to die, and at the same time you are identifying with the body. Say the government says, the soul is live forever, eternal. We will pay our obeisances to them if they are telling us that. But they won't tell us that, would they? Pension is for the body, not for the self. Self doesn't need any pension. But this illusion of pension and maya is so strong that it's great. So much newspapers, so many books, independent financial advisors for you to tell you how to do it, and all kinds of things in this world running around in this fundamental principle anyway. So, so if you don't want to die, then you have to know that you are that awareness inside, Atma, who doesn't die. Otherwise there is no hope. Being the body, you can't expect deathlessness. That is not possible, isn't it? So that is not possible. Body will die. Soul will not die. That's the thing. So that is our identity. And this doesn't require a lot of education. Because nobody wants to die, and we cannot even die if we want to die. If we are Atma, Atma cannot die. That's the problem. Even if you want to die, you can die. You cannot die. So, but if you insist that this deathlessness you want to experience with the body, that's not possible. Therefore, if you impose the factors that is influencing the body, like birth, death, old age and disease, if you impose them on the self, then you have to make this inquiry called self-inquiry. That's where self-inquiry comes. Different people will present the same thing in different ways. Patanjali will say one thing, Vaishnava will say another thing, Shaivas will say another thing, Advaitis will say one thing. Whatever it may be, it all boils back to this one thing and one thing alone. That if you want to free yourself from this misery, which is created by this only ajnanam or avidya inside us, due to which we have imposed all the dharmam of the body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses on our real self who we are. Due to that ajnanam or avidya, this process continues to exist like this, and therefore you have to make an inquiry who you are, and that is called self-inquiry. So, in different ways, people, Atma-anveshanam or Atma-vicharam, so many things. So, as long as we forget this, who I am, who completely forgets that, and if I am thinking I am this body, and if I am imposing all the activities of the body on the self,
And then what happened? Due to the identification with this body, it starts developing into extended bodily identities. Is it not? The moment you identify yourself with one particular body, you start thinking that in relationship with this body, because I'm identifying, somebody is my husband, somebody is my wife. They are my children, and these are my relatives, cousins or whatever. In different levels, all other identities comes on and take their positions around you. All other relationships, isn't it? And once you have developed that, it started with the body, this ignorance of adhyasam. It began with adhyasam, and now what has happened? You have identified with the body, aham. And with aham what happened? Mameti came. Mameti means it's all mine. All these relatives are my relatives, isn't it? Ato griha kshetra sudapta vitter janasya mohoyam aham mameti. Rishabhadev says this to his children, isn't it? The 100 children he spoke. Ato griham kshetram sutam aptam vittam janasya. Janasya moham aham mameti. This is that illusion it creates. This illusion creates this. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. Rishabhadev says to Bharata Maharshi, look at their state of consciousness. Rishabhadev is speaking to his own children this. And after that he walked out of the palace. Is it not? So you can see, ato griha kshetra suta apta vitter janasya mohoyam aham mameti. He says, with this identity of the body, these things followed that. Suta, children, kshetram, the land, everything, birth, land of birth. Suta, griha kshetra suta. Griham kshetram sutam. Children and the money all centered around that, and the people around that, janasya mohoyam aham mameti. Me and mine. Me and mine. Me, mine. Everything in this world is like that. Me, mine. Me, mine. Everywhere you look at it, in so many places in the Bhagavatam, you will see this coming. Me and mine. Me and mine. Me and mine. It doesn't matter whether you are in spiritual life or material life. What does it matter? As long as this aham mameti is there, we are one and the same. We will be changing dresses, that's all. There's practically no other difference at all. So, here, he's saying here that aham mameti. So, as soon as this happens, that once this mamata built up, tension begins from there. It will become tension. Then the fear comes from that. But, so, if everything what is happening with this body, even though is not real as far as the self is concerned, is it not? Even that's not real because you have imposed all the problems of this body on the self. But once you become aware that this body is not the self, even what is happening to your own body is not a truth. It's not a truth. And what is happening to the body itself is not causing any problem to the self inside. If it is like that, how true it is when you are worrying about your wife and children and other relatives? How much real that is? How real that is? If what is happening, what we have analyzed today, if what is happening to your own body and the mind, we have seen even that's not real. Why? Because you are not that. Body is not real. If it is like that, what is even happening to your own body is not real. If it is like that, how can you take it seriously, what is happening to other bodies, other living entities, or all other experiences as real? How real are they then? And you can see, due to identification, fear developed in the body, isn't it? In the mind. It is due to the fear that is developed due to identification with the body. If there was no identification with the body, you would not be frightened about the body. Remember, when Bhadrakali came with the sword and cut the throat of everything and started dancing, Jadabharata sat there, unaffected by anything. Why? Because Jadabharata knows
that body is not me. It's just like the here, the situation. Jarabhadradayi said they are totally unaffected. And interesting thing is, Bhadrakali is also in the same state. So she says and asks, she comes there and asks Jarabharata that, what can I do for you? Jarabharata says to Bhadrakali, you are Sachidananda Swarupini. I am Sachidanandam. Sachidanandam doesn't ask help for another Sachidanandam, he says. That's the answer. You are Sachidanandam. She is like that, in that state. He is also in the same state. So what one can do for others? This asking help and asking to solve the different problems of this life is all on the bodily level, isn't it? So Shukha Brahmarshi is saying to us, that is why when Shukha Brahmarshi started Bhagavatam, he mentioned certain things there. What? Kasmat bhajanti kavayodhana durmadhandha. Why run after all these wealthy people to maintain your so-called body, he says there. Then, you have nothing to do with this body. So, here, you can see the power of adhyasam, what it has done to us. It has created fear in us because of adhyasam with this body. Not only it has created the fear due to this body, it has created the fear due to this body being connected with other bodies in this world. Bodily extensions. Husband, wife, children, grandchildren. Sometimes people suffer in this world unnecessarily to such an extent due to this adhyasam. You can't say anything to them. If you tell them that, then they tell you. They'll tell you off. They say, don't tell me Vedantam, they say. But what can you do? Vedantam is the truth. What you are living in illusion, what can you do? You have to say this. But we all go through this. So when all I can, it's not that I don't have it. So when I'm in trouble, you should come and tell me the same thing what I'm telling you now. That's all I can say. What else can I do? We can only do that. We can help each other in that way. That the truth is something different. You don't know the truth, I don't know the truth, because both of us are suffering. That's the truth. So when not that I have realized all these things, so I'm telling you. No. I'm telling you because this is what in the Bhagavatam it is written like this. Only reading the other books you understand it is like this. But getting out of it is another thing. That takes its own time. So, but you have to say this, the right thing to a person when he is in trouble. No, don't tell him, oh, we should not talk Vedantam to him now. If I tell him Vedantam, then he'll misunderstand. Instead, I should join him in his misery and try to console him by saying, oh, life is like that, this, that and the other. That's all useless. Waste of time. Instead, if you tell that person the right thing when he is in trouble, that you are doing something good to him. Not misleading him. But if you keep on guiding him in the same Andhayadhandairuviniyamanam, he says, blind leading the blind, if you join the blind parambara, what is going to happen? You also strengthen that blind parambara strongly. That's what it will happen. So that's what should be avoided. I think we'll stop today. This is a big topic, we'll continue tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.